is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee here. Love to be with him. Normally I'm with him. Yeah, normally I'm with him on a Monday night tonight. A little bit of a sleepy Saturday morning. I got to be honest. You know, me and my co-host here are nothing if not open books. And hey, cards on the table. Daddy's a little tired, but we're going to make some radio magic. I'm fired up about it. First things first, before I get started, kudos to all my colleagues with kids. Boy, it's a little tougher to do this job while sleep-deprived and trying to juggle a little rugrat. No one cares about that. There, got it off my chest.
I do.
You do. I will say, you've been hyping me up for being a father all week in the text, keeping me informed on stuff. I love it. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Well, thank you, technical producer Derek Brandeo. I think buzzing in my ear, maybe buzzing over the air, telling me he doesn't care, but congratulations. Not over the air. I'm thrilled to be here. What a day to do a show, honestly. We're going to dive into the NBA. I know you're upset about some things. You're excited about some things. There's some news going on in the NBA. We'll get to that in a second. But, McKee, are you going to be okay? City's going back into lockdown on Monday. I know. You're a social being, much more so than I. I get all the socializing I need to do per 12 months on the golf course, and golf season's over, so I'm good now. But you actually like to talk to people when there isn't a little white ball involved. Are you going to be okay? I'm just, first things first, just a mental health checkup on my bud. Are you going to be okay?
Yeah, Gunnar, I'm ready for this. You know, I kind of expected this for the past, I don't know, week, 2 weeks, you know, things have been really kind of getting squirrely here in Toronto with the COVID numbers. And I was thinking, you know, we're probably heading back towards this at some point. So the announcement came down yesterday after Dougie teased it like it was a new shoe drop on Friday. And he came out with this big announcement yesterday and we talked about it. And I don't know, I think I'm ready for it. I've got a fiance I love, I've got a dog I love, I've got coffee I love, I've got Netflix I love. There's some sports on TV, so like, there are things on TV. You can watch some action, some golf, some NFL. There's stuff to watch. So, yeah, I'm ready for it. You know, it sucks. Like, I really do feel for, you know, my friends and my people in the service industry. You know, that's a really tough one. I feel for my boy Waylon, my barber, and all the barbers and hairdressers around Toronto. I think that's a really tough blow because, you know, I, like, not to get too down this hole, but it's 8 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I'm just going to take the platform we have, you know, but like, I feel terrible. Like I go to this barbershop, I'll give them a name drop. I go to Night Owl and they do an unbelievable job of, you know, making you feel safe. They're super clean. They're wiping down the door when you come in, they're wiping down the door when you come out. They're spaced out great. They're extremely clean and they make you feel great. They've done an excellent job of it. They actually had somebody in their sort of bubble that was, had a significant other who was exposed to COVID and they closed for 4 days. So everybody got tested. They opened back up. Everything was great. Like, they've just done an excellent job. And I just feel like a lot of places have done a really good job and they're getting punished for it. But, you know, Walmart can stay open. So it's just the messaging's a little mixed to me. And I feel really guilty for my sort of mom and pop shop kind of people that are going to have to go through this sort of nightmare again. And I'm sure there's a lot of them that aren't going to survive it.
So I want to pick up on that soapbox because I agree with everything you just said, but I feel like we're burying the lead. If I don't say Night Owl sounds like, I would never accuse them of being an illegal speakeasy. I'm just saying it does sound like it's like...
There is a bar named Night Owl, too.
Me and the boys headed down to Night Owl tonight. You just got to know the secret knock three times and then one with the elbow. No, but I mean, exactly. I wholeheartedly agree, man. My heart aches. You know, I just moved out here. I've got I've got some local businesses out here in Burlington I've been liking to support as well. You know, some mom and pop shops. You know, you're talking about the barbers and the hairdressers and, you know, obviously the takeout, it's been a thing now, but I can't preach that enough. Like, if you have a little restaurant you love and you want to make sure you can love it for another 10 years when we're eventually out of this, hey, go get some takeout or what, find a way to support your small business. I know early on there was the drive of even if you're not going to do or if you're not going to use it right now, go buy a gift card, give them a little cash flow, whatever you can do. So I'm right there with you. And yeah, definitely is a little the rules are a little confusing. It's also funny just thinking back to where we were when this was all starting. It's like, oh my god, it's over 100 cases, and boy did we get used to another zero on that really quickly. Yeah. It's just crazy how things change like that.
That's true. You know, it's really been, you know, like everything that's bad in 2020, we've kind of just normalized it. And it's something that we've kind of put out of our mind and don't think about. But yeah, like I went to last night, you know, went to a local establishment that has a rather great patio. Maybe had a couple bowls of loudmouth soup. So see what happens. But yeah, I there's a server at this place because I've been known to frequent it. And he was having a great time. He was talking to us. He was really upbeat about it. But yeah, like. I fear for those people that work in the service industry and have been doing a great job throughout this. So we don't have to talk about it for all the whole, you know, show, but just all the best to everybody out there. I really hope you're able to find some, you know, find something to do because we're heading back into the lockdown. But here's the thing. So are people just from Toronto going to go travel, like go other places? Like, I don't know. Like, is that going to happen? Because I feel like that shouldn't happen, but we'll see. I don't know.
Oh, it definitely will happen. It shouldn't. I mean, the idea that it's like, well, I live on the border of York and Toronto. I can't cross the street to get my groceries or whatever. Yeah. But I'll bring it back to sports just a bit. All we want is a consistently officiated game. You know, you just if the call is outside, let it be outside for both teams. And I can certainly see the people rolling their eyes at Walmart or Costco or whoever else that's got the nice big strike zone, and you're getting squeezed if you're the little guy. So there, I made it sports. Look at that, me on a Saturday morning. So the sports thing we got to talk about: NBA free agency. This league knows how to make news. You text our producer this morning, Dan Marino, and it's a good thing you did because I was prepared to start the show with a PSA that went something in and along these lines. There were a flurry of NBA moves made after midnight last night, and producer host Brent Cutting and Sam McKee tried their best to keep in touch, but please let us forgive us if we do skip one and miss it. I tried to keep up with it as much as I could. Started at 6, felt like more stuff was trickling in after midnight when I was still up. I guess the good thing for the Raptors is still no news on Fred VanVleet or Serge Ibaka. I think that's good news. The fact that some teams were just splashing around money, especially on bigs, I think that definitely helps them a little more with Serge. We'll get back into the Raptors for a sec, but I mean, you're like me, you just love news no matter what it is, and boy, we got a ton of it yesterday.
Man, like, I look back, what summer was that people got crazy overpaid? 2016, Gunner? I can't remember.
Yeah,
Timothy Mozgov got like $100 million, and Luol Deng got like all that money. And I was like, wow, that was a crazy time, and people got crazy overpaid. But I'm looking through some of these names that, you know, our intrepid producer, Dan Marino, wrote down for me. And there's just some silly money getting handed out again. And I'm surprised. Like, I didn't necessarily expect it to be like, you know, the NHL, where it was quite a, you know, there was quite a big discount had for a lot of these sort of mid-level guys that weren't necessarily the superstars, and you could kind of find some value. But value was not had yesterday. Like, I'm looking at, you know, I love my boy Davis Bertans. I really do. Every time I watch him play the Raptors, it feels like that guy's never going to miss. He's a really good player. He signed a 5-year, $80 million contract. Like, what is Fred VanVleet going to make? That's the thing. I look at all these guys that have signed, and I'm like, is Fred more impactful than that guy? Well, kind of. And that guy got $60 million. Is Fred more impactful than this guy? Oh, he got $65 million? Like, this market is not necessarily what I was expecting it to be. And maybe that's stupid because it's the NBA. There's a ton of money. That's the way it was always going to be. Maybe I'm just a big Dumbo, which is always a possibility. But I'm surprised by these numbers. And I think this is not a hot take here, but I think the Raptors are going to have to pay, you know, out of some orifice of their body for this contract for Fred VanVleet if they want to retain him. This is going to take a huge deal, man.
Well, and the thing that I think we've got to kind of dive into today is there or should there be a walk-away number for the Raptors? And I honestly don't know about that because the only way there should be a walk-away number is if you are hell-bent on going after Giannis next summer. And if that's the case, I can't knock it. I think we all kind of trust Masai enough. We'd feel a lot better about it if there was a contract extension in place for him. But boy, we can talk certainly. And consternate over that. You talk about Davis Bertans. You're right. They tell me he's a 42% three-point shooter. Lies. Never
he's
seen
a dead-eye shooter.
I've never ever seen him miss. Definitely not against the Raptors.
He's 100%.
And maybe I'm going to lead a horse to water here. You know why he got that big deal? got to keep John Wall happy. He wants out. They got it. They got to splash a little money on Bertans just to keep John Wall happy. 3 years left on his deal. We just heard it in the update from the very energetic Maria Saint-Aubin. And, yeah, he wants out. I know you're a little fired up about that.
Yeah, I read that last night right before I went to bed. One of the last things I saw was I saw the sort of discussion of the Russell Westbrook for John Wall contract, the sort of swap that was being discussed. And then I saw that, Russell Westbrook wanted out. Russell Westbrook does want out too.
They all want out.
Everybody just wants out. That's the league now. They should just be called the I Want Out League. But John Wall wanting out is pretty despicable to me. What did they pay him? $1 billion? And now, what is it? 2 years later, has he played one game on that contract? I feel like he hasn't played one game on that contract. What could they possibly have done other than driving your dump truck full of money to your house that you could want out? They're paying you a gajillion dollars to rehab and get the direction of the team. They haven't traded Bradley Beal. They actually were kind of plucky last year. They were they were a passable team. If they had a healthy John Wall, they might be a halfway decent playoff team. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Who do you think you are, John Wall? You've been hurt. You're making $45 million a year and you've been hurt and you think you haven't played and you think you can just demand a trade? Look, I understand what the NBA is these days. Guys want out. Look, James Harden, he wants out, right? And he's given that he's given that franchise heart, blood, sweat, tears, whatever you want to say. He's played hard every game. He's played so many games for the Houston Rockets, they haven't been able to get over the hump. So you know what? I somewhat identify with him being like, I want to get a trade. Him being like, I want to go to Brooklyn, that's a different story. I kind of don't like that. But I understand if you have been giving your all for a franchise and you're like, hey, man, I want out. I've given all I can give here. I get that. And I understand that. And it's the player empowerment era. And I'm happy about that. I like that way. I really do. The way the NBA is now, I kind of like it. But for John Wall to do this, that is absolutely insane to me. I truly can't. If I was a GM of the Washington, the Washington Wizards, and I looked at my Twitter machine, or I get a text from somebody in John Wall's camp, and he's like, yeah, we're gonna demand a trade here. Demand a trade? You haven't played in 3 years. It's insane. I was so shocked by that. I don't know how you felt about that, but man, that's despicable.
So maybe it just says more about, I don't know, the state of the league or whatever. I want to be clear. On the surface, I don't disagree with anything you're saying. Yes, come on. What are you doing? You've been banged up the whole time. No wonder the team stinks. You are supposed to be the driving engine. You're the number one pick. All that stuff, wholeheartedly. But I wasn't remotely surprised. I mean, this is I think what it comes down to, and again, I want to be clear, I'm basically just kind of explaining where he's at as opposed to agreeing with it. But I think this is a guy who looks around, and again, no one to blame. I don't even want to say but himself, because it's is health a skill? Is it luck? Whatever, that's a whole other discussion for another day. But he looks around the league.
Availability is the best ability.
Yeah, and there's definitely something to that. I wholeheartedly agree with that. But he looks around the league. This is a guy who is a number one pick, and in the times he's been healthy, has shown he can be a, whatever you want to call it, a second banana on a championship-level-ish
good
team.
Player.
Of course he can be. So I honestly just think it's a case where he looks around the league and think about it. Think about all the guys we just talked about moving. Think about what's going on in Brooklyn, and think about what the Raptors have built in Toronto. Think about all the movement that's happened out west with the Lakers and the Clippers. And I think it's just a guy who's sick and tired of not being in the mix. Now, having said that, get healthy and get yourself in the mix. You and Bradley Beal should be an unbelievable duo. There's no reason why it can't work. Now, I do have to put my cards on the table here. I think I've talked about this before on the air. I have a unexplainable affinity for the guys from that Kentucky team. Eric Bledsoe, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins. Now, Patrick Patterson played for the Raptors. Now, I feel a certain type of different way about him. But for that Kentucky team, when I was at school at Windsor, they were on TV all the time. I must have watched 35 of their games that year. So I just, I love those guys. I cannot knock it. Same with Boogie Cousins. It's availability, the best ability. I would, when I remember him signing with the Warriors, I'm finally, something about that team. team I can like, I can get behind. And then, of course, just didn't really work out.
That was an awesome team.
Oh, they were incredible. And again, like, just a soft spot for me that I can't seem to shake. But I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but it's where the league is at right now. It's clearly a guy who, you know, hey, we talk about it. You probably talk about it in your own work meetings. We talk about it with ours. It's guys just going, you know, I feel like I should be in the mix a little more. I feel like I should get a little bit more of a crack. You know, maybe you're trying to make partner at your law firm. You're probably not trying to make partner at your law firm. You listen to us at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. But yeah, again,
no chance.
Get the gist of what I'm getting at here. It's like you just want to be in the mix, and you're always, and what's the easiest thing to do is look for somebody else to blame, try to find something that's not your fault. So I'm with you. I totally understand the frustration. I think that's where it comes down to, is it's a guy who looks around the league and, you know, is he James Harden? Is he Kevin Durant? Is he Kyrie Irving? No. But in his mind, he's not that far removed from that tier, if not in that tier.
Yeah, I think you laid that out beautifully, Gunnar, and I think that's a good point. And you're right. He looks around and he sees everybody demanding trades, and he's like, why can't I demand a trade? But it just, aesthetically to me, that one is just so bad. But, you know, if you have him healthy and you know, you have Bradley Beal healthy, and, you know, you get this almost max player in Davis Bertans in there, and then you sort of add in some guys, like, that's a team. In the East, you're telling me that team can't be a 5 seed in the East, like a 6 seed in the East? Like, I don't know. It's just... So what does John Wall want to get traded? Where does he want to get traded to? Like, what team can even take that contract on to me? And like, who's going to take that risk? He hasn't played. I don't know. It just was such a mind blowing one, but you're a big John Wall fan. You must've been trying that Dougie back in college, university.
Yeah.
I can just picture a, you know, 23 year old gunner, him and his boys in the college house just trying that Dougie. I can just see it right now.
The only thing that stopped me from getting in on the Dougie was I was a little too locked onto the couch. Me and the couch had an unbreakable bond. You going to class today? Nah, I think I'm just going to hang out on the couch. They put the notes online. Slides are there. Don't do that, kids. That's how you end up doing radio.
Stay in school, kids.
Saturday morning. Yeah, stay in school. For real school as well. Not what I ended up doing. Also, follow your dreams. Speaking out of both sides of my mouth. When I'm looking at the NBA, obviously, we didn't really talk about we talked a little bit about the Raptors there. Didn't talk about where they're going to be calling home. I think we're both on the same page here. Okay, cool. They're in Tampa. The thing I can't ever seem to shake my mind on is, okay, I understand. I want to be clear. I will lay my cards on the table. I think the Canadian government made the right call not allowing the league to come in here in, out, in, out. I think that's the right call. But I can also look at things and go, Florida is the safest spot. I know that's where the NBA had the bubble, but it's like the idea of just setting the Raptors loose in Tampa, and it's like, surely this will be fine. I don't know. It's like I can't seem to wrap my head around that part of the equation. I don't know that it matters where they play if it's not here. Of course, here would be the best case scenario. I don't think it makes any viable sense for, you know, our society, not so much the NBA, but in terms of where they end up playing, if it was Nashville, cool. If it was Buffalo, cool. It's Tampa. Okay, sure. Just a little weird to me that it's Florida is all I kind of land on.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's sort of a fair point and one we can talk about here. But, you know, I think I saw that I forget who I saw tweet. Potentially it was Grange, but I saw somebody saying that, you know, it was a real collaborative effort. And the Raptors really got a lot of opinions from all the guys on the team, the players who play on the team, about where they wanted to play. And you know what? As an aside, that just makes me so happy that the Raptors are that kind of organization, you know? There's a lot of teams that would just be like, let's just go somewhere, and they wouldn't consult the players, and they'd have sort of division amongst the team. And the Raptors went out and talked to all their players and came up with the idea, and they wanted to go to Florida. And guess what? If I'm playing basketball in the winter, Florida sounds like a pretty good spot. And yeah, but I kind of understand why they did that. But just to go back to the Canadian border thing, like, when they didn't do it with the Jays, I was somewhat perturbed, and I went on these airways and talked about how I thought it was a little bit of eyewash, and turned out to be right, because there was a ton of breakouts everywhere in baseball. But I look at this one, and it was like, when that was happening, Canada was doing a good kind of, Ontario was kind of doing a decent job of keeping this under control, you know, like there wasn't 1,200 new cases every day popping up. Now the horses are out of the barn. So I'm a little bit more surprised now that, you know, we've gotten to this point where it's like pretty bad. And by, you know, they're trying to do this lockdown thing. And maybe by the time the NBA season starts on December 22nd, they'll be able to lift it. But who knows? I just, I think that now would have been, I thought they would have been maybe able to sort of sneak this in when the time when things are a little bit more out of control. But the Canadian government said no, and I think the Raptors would be okay with it. The only thing is that concerns me is trying to sign these 1 or 2 year deals. These guys that, like, it kind of, you know, what direction are you going to go in? Because if you're the Raptors here and you sign Fred VanVleet, you have a 2 or 3 year window, or maybe not even three, maybe 2 year window, let's say. If you bring back Serge, if you have Kyle for another year, like, you're not looking at these long-term guys. You're looking at sort of the 1-2 year guys that can kind of fill in and sort of turn your team from, you know, the contender into kind of, not putting them over the top, but just having the veteran guys that can kind of add to it. So that would be concerning to me, with not knowing where you're going to play. But the other guys, they'll figure it out. Like, they have trust in the organization. Like, I'm not worried about that with signing Fred. He knows eventually they'll be back in Toronto. He knows what Toronto's about. He's been here for however long. So yeah, those are my kind of thoughts on the government and not letting them in here and what that's going to mean for Raptors free agency. But I do have concerns with it, with the 1 or 2 year deals, for sure.
I think that's definitely a fair point, that guys would want to know where you're living. Like, there's a on the other hand, there's a massive difference between Florida in January and Toronto in January. And if I'm a free agent who is not from here, it might help. And then this is the part that I am not going to do layman's law here. I'm not a tax lawyer. I cannot tell you if this is how it works. Maybe there's we always hear about the lightning and no state income tax. And I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe,
I wonder how that works.
I think how it works. I think how it works is you have to establish residency there. Now it's like, hey, could a good lawyer establish residency very, very quickly? I don't know. Maybe, probably, hopefully that's something maybe the Raptors can bank on. Yeah.
Kyle Lowry gets paid like $33 million a year. I'm sure he could find a lawyer, pay a lawyer to figure it out. I'm sure he could get that. No problem.
Well, as with all things, all roads lead back to golf, and they should just do what those guys do. Just like incorporate themselves out of Qatar or whatever it is, so they never have to pay tax on anything. And that's the case. Then, yeah, just one last thing on the whole border shutdown. It's like, it's no surprise that the Raptors didn't throw a stink about this or anything. Masai Ujiri literally campaigned for Justin Trudeau in the last federal election. So, I think they have a pretty good rapport there.
How eloquent was that release, too? You read that. It was like, they're just like, we love our fans. I was like, oh my God. Like, this is the first press release I've ever read where I'm like tearing up. I'm like, I love you, Raptors. There's just like, it's just gone from, you know, Linus Klaza and Andrea Bargnani to like the model franchise in the NBA. It's just crazy. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Now, when you saw, I don't know how you saw the statement, the way I saw it. Now, I have a little Twitter alert set up. So when the Raptors put out a statement, I get it. And all I saw was statement from Masai Ujiri. And you can imagine all types of ways my mind went. And I'm like, the team's I was almost too scared to read it at first. It's like, well, if the team's releasing it, that's got to be good, right? Like, the team wouldn't release it. He would release it. And then obviously has nothing to do with his future. That's still the thing that's going to continue to weigh over all this.
Hang over everything.
And it is. Yeah. And look, it's frustrating. And, you know, we've hashed it out a million times. I think everyone knows where we stand. The guy has earned all the time in the world he wants to make any decision he could possibly want. There is no ill will anyone in the organization could have, no matter how long he takes to make whatever decision he has. And not just the organization, but the kind of fan base and people in this city. But boy, it certainly continues to weigh over. One last thing that I do want to get into the NBA before we step aside here. The Bucks, they are going all in to try to make things sexy for Giannis, but they got nicked with a tampering allegation earlier this week. And so they had the sign and trade in place for Bogdan Bojanovic with the Kings. Then the NBA said, you better not do that or there's going to be problems. Now, I defend LeBron at all costs. There's no chance that's happening if the Lakers had a sign and trade with someplace. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. So it's not happening. And I think, you know, we talk about the kind of what's the thing on Twitter? This league. And usually it's good, but there's sometimes, and you know, maybe it's the John Wall thing for you, for this, for me, it's the kind of inconsistency of how different franchises get dealt with. Like when the Lakers had a tampering allegation, it was Magic Johnson, just pay $500K, which is pocket change to you. Okay, move along. Whereas the Bucks, it sounded like it was going to be something maybe more serious if they went through. It does just feel like, look, it's a star-driven league and big markets rule the day, but this one really, if I'm a Bucks fan, and I'm not, I'd love Giannis to leave, but if I'm a Bucks fan, that would really chap me.
Yeah, and I'm sure that probably chaps old Giannis too. Like, that's, I mean, you got Drew Holiday, and boy, oh boy. I mean, we can go back to that one. That was a overpay, capital O, overpay. Like, I do like Drew Holiday, and anytime, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I watched a ton of Pelican games over the past 3 or 4 years, but, you know, anytime they play the Raptors or anytime they were playing in a big national game and I watched them, I was always impressed with, you know, Drew Holiday. But that seemed like a huge overpay. But maybe that's the guy that, you know, Giannis sort of identified and was like, hey, they should bring here. But Bogdanović was a huge part of him. You know, that was like a big part of them sort of trying to woo him to stay, I think. Like, he's a really good player, impactful, and kind of fits that system perfectly. I don't know, man. Like, there's no way. I got to ask you this, because I've been thinking about this all week. They have to know that he's staying, right? They wouldn't have made that Drew Holiday trade without knowing that he's staying. Like, I really have a hard time believing that, you know, Giannis seems like a pretty good guy, seems like a pretty straightforward guy, that he would be honest with them. There's no way they're making that deal if Giannis is, like, on the fence. Or are they making that to try to convince him? It's crazy to me.
I agree with everything you said about Giannis seems like a straight shooter, and he is probably honest with them. And I bet the lines of communication are extremely open and clear. But if I had to, you know, and hey, we're all just guessing at what's going on in his head. If I had to guess, the lines of communication would be, this needs to improve. I would like to stay here. I would love to be a Buck for the rest of my NBA career, for the rest of my prime. I'd love to re-up and do the 5-year Supermax or whatever it is, but I need more. And I'm sure that they were like, well, what's more? And he probably handed them a list of guys and said, I like these guys. Go get one or some of them. So I don't know that they know he's staying as much as he has given them the indication that, look, this all goes back to them not inking Malcolm Brogdon 2 or 3 summers ago, whatever it was now. They keep trying to fix that mistake. Yeah. And it's just, once that happened, I do imagine it. I don't think it created any ill will within that organization in him, but I do think it made him question just what's going on there. And I think ever since, they've had to kind of prove themselves to him that, yes, we're in it to win. Yes, we're going to spend money. But I mean, the idea that, you know, the idea that if he wanted to stay, would he, you know, if they were certain he was staying, would he want them to give up all those future first round picks? Because at the deadline, yeah, we know teams like that love to go out and make moves. I mean, think about it, like GM LeBron, we've heard it a billion times, right? And it's like, well, he's going to kind of be the next guy who's at the, you know, wearing the crown for the league. So I'm kind of conflicted on it. I think you're right. I think he's open. I think he's straightforward. I don't think they know he's staying. I think they know he would like to. And that's where I think it probably lands.
So let me ask you this. The trade was Bledsoe, George Hill, and then like a trillion picks and pick swaps. Like, how much better are the Bucks now? Are they like that much? But, you know, you look at those two huge trades that happened last year, right? Where, you know, the Lakers maybe that wasn't last year, it was 2 years ago, the summer after the Raptors won the championship, which, I mean, time's a flat circle. I have no idea when anything happened. But, you know, that trade, obviously, when they gave up half the team and all the picks, but they got Anthony Davis, and they were instantly a title contender, and they won the title. You look at the trade for way off P, as I've liked to be calling him recently, playoff P, Paul George. You know, you look at that trade, and on paper, you're getting what supposedly is supposed to be like a top 20 guy, top 15 guy. And at his best, you know, like, he could, like, there was that one little stretch there where he was playing like an MVP candidate. So, like, there's a guy there that, you know, on paper is sort of one of those guys that can be a first banana or a second banana on a championship team. But they made that same trade for Drew Holiday. And it's like, Drew Holiday's a really nice player, and I like what Drew Holiday brings, but, like, I really don't know how much better they are with him instead of you know, Bledsoe and George Hill. I really don't know. I almost call him Drew Bledsoe, by the way. You know, Saturday morning. Really close to calling him Drew Bledsoe. Yeah, so thank you. So, yeah, I really thought that was an obscene overpay, and they really, I mean, they're better. I don't think there's any argument to say that they are better with Drew Holiday, but they're not 4 first-round picks, 4 pick swaps better than, like for example, the Lakers got when they made that sort of same sort of trade for Anthony Davis. So that's kind of the parallel I draw.
You say time is a flat circle. Let's bring it back to something earlier in this conversation. Would you feel better about that trade if they made it for super disgruntled point guard John Wall instead. Like, it's like, I think we all agree that would be a higher ceiling team. Again, you can have your qualms about character or availability, but it's like there's a massive difference between a guy like that and Holiday. I still feel like I agree. It's like they upgraded, but not massively.
I don't feel like I even remember what John Wall looks like on a basketball court. Like I feel like that was just like 10 years ago, and it's like I remember him being fast and couldn't shoot threes. That's my John Wall scouting report. Unbelievably fast. Always took the ball from one end of the floor to the other against the Raptors. Was amazing against the Raptors, but could never hit a three. How's that sound? Because that's what I remember of him.
Not wrong.
It's been so long, but he needs out. He needs out because, you know, he's just so disgruntled. They're paying him $45 million to rehab. Get me out of here. I got to go. Yeah. Maybe we should go.
Yeah, lastly, couple quick things here. Former Raptor getting paid. We love a big bag of milk. Jakob Poeltl getting 3x27 in San Antonio. Good for him. I mean, that was a guy who
love
had
it.
Good little Raptors run here. Loved watching him yam on guys. I'm sure he's been doing well in San Antonio. And then just to bring it back to the CanCon, tremendous story. This kid, Kareem Mané, signing with Orlando as an undrafted free agent. And the reason he was undrafted is because he last played basketball at Vanier College in Quebec. So anytime a guy could go from Canadian college to now fringy
cool.
NBA roster spot, definitely a soft spot for us. I know I speak for you there.
Love that.
Love a little CanCon. What else we love? Some NHL talk. And Andrew Raycroft joined the guys on Leadoff. We'll listen to that when we continue next on Sportsnet Today.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Earlier in the week, actually just yesterday, I think about 24 hours ago, Andrew Raycroft joined the guys on Leadoff Plenty to kick around in the NHL. So let's hear from the former Leaf now.
Well, I think we do this on purpose, right?
Mm.
Like he calls in and he thinks he's coming on, then we make him sit and listen to us.
He's never been late. You know
on. Well, he's on time.
He's always on time.
Made him sit. Well, we also booked him in the prime slot, 8:30, like he could get a sleep in this morning.
Do you know who was not on time for their skate? Two players at the World Juniors, and they told them to leave the ice when they got out there. That happened yesterday at the World Juniors. I'm wondering, has Razor ever slept in past his alarm and showed up late to the arena?
Andrew Raycroft is here. The way that he's asking that question and the smirk I can see on his face through FaceTime tells me the answer is yes.
Morning, guys. Yeah, it's a pleasure to come on and listen to your show.
And get abused.
I can't get it here in Boston, so I just sit, you know, on the line for 45 minutes. It's great entertainment, thinking of Ziggy eating at McDonald's. The scariest time I had, and I almost missed a bus in the minors, but the scariest one I had is we were in Columbus. I was playing in Colorado at the time, and we were in Columbus, and we were flying from the West Coast, so my time change, everything was all messed up, and I slept through the alarm. Pre-game skate at 10:30. I woke up at 9:50. Somewhere around there, and I hammered it down to the rink, got there, walked in, and no one noticed that I was late. The only guy was the PR guy, saw me walk in, like, hey, what do you do? I was, like, meeting a guy out here. I was just a buddy on the other team. So it was close once, but I would not want to be one of those World Junior guys. We obviously know Team Canada does not look fondly on being late. So that's going to be a long couple days for those kids.
Yeah. Well, they were getting, the story was they were getting therapy, and everything's like with the pandemic right now, everyone dealing with COVID. Apparently it's really hard, right? Like guys are in different rooms, they're spaced out. And then therapy is a bit of a question because they can only treat so many guys. So apparently they walked out right when practice started. Like they were group huddling for the first drill and they were given the option, hey, you can come out and it will look bad because, you know, we're giving you guys preferential treatment, or you guys cannot come on, and that really sends the message. And I kind of like that idea. I like that the coach gave them the option, and, you know, even more respect for the players to say, you know what, we got to be better with our time, whether, you know, we're dealing with everything in a COVID. I remember I only showed up late to practice once. It was in Phoenix. I woke up half hour before practice, and I have never been that scared ever before. And only two or three guys saw me walk in. I walked in the back door. I was so late, though, that day. A lot of times at practice, guys go out for the power play to work on it 15, 20 minutes early, and they were already on the ice on the far side. So no one really knew I wasn't late either, but a couple guys did know, and they were like, oh, I can't wait to unload this one and tell everybody.
Yeah, you take those guys to lunch, dinner, for the next 2 weeks to keep them quiet.
I still send a guy gift cards on his birthday.
McDonald's gift cards.
Yeah.
$100 to the person who makes our morning on the text line at 590-590. Keep them coming, because we make that decision in about 12 minutes at 850. I don't know if you knew this about your pal, Michael Zigomanis, but we were having a conversation yesterday before Marnie McBean, the chef de mission for Canada's 2020, now 2021 Olympic bid, was our guest.
Chef de mission. I told you I speak many languages.
Yes.
You didn't believe me.
I want you to list them by the end of the show. All of the languages you speak.
English? A little bit of French?
Apparently just a tiny bit of French. Does he speak Spanish? Any Spanish get spoken down in Cabo?
It's Cancun.
Oh, Cancun.
He mixes in. He just has, but it's the same accent for every single language he speaks, right? It's the exact same dialect, same accent for whether it's Italian, Australian, whatever it is, he's saying it the same way.
Oh, my God. It doesn't matter if he's in Quebec City or Mexico City.
I can't believe you actually tried to speak French on the radio, Ziggy. I mean,
Chef de mission. I mean, I want that title one day just because it's so fancy. I mean, it sounds.
Money Razor has never heard of Chef de mission. Guaranteed, he's never heard of that.
No,
at the Olympic. There you go. See, that was the first time I heard of it. I was practicing it before the show yesterday, and the guys were giving me a hard time.
Well, you deserve it.
Yeah. Well, he was. He said he was going to bed the night before, lying in bed, saying "Chef de mission, chef de mission, chef de mission," so he doesn't screw
it up. Oh, you nailed it, Ziggy. You really nailed it.
Thank you.
So, how do you feel about the reverse retro yellow jersey that the Bees rolled out? I love the old spoked B of the '80s. That reminds me of Cam Neely and Ray Bourque, and I like the bear on the shoulders too. That's also from the '80s jersey. What do you make of all the yellow, though?
I like it. I was hoping for the Pooh Bear. I'm a Pooh Bear supporter down here. There's not too many of them, but I thought that would have been cool. But my kids are pumped about it. They've got it on their Christmas list already. So they did a good job. I love all of the jerseys. You know, even the ones that are a little on the edge, I think it's great. I think it's cool. I know the kids all love it. So in this time of building revenue, finding revenue for the NHL, I think they did Adidas did a great job across the board, and they got creative, which is kind of nice to see the old hockey guard get creative and do some randomness.
You played in the Pooh Bear, right?
Yeah, first game of my NHL career was in the Pooh Bear, so it's sentimental for me. And I thought it would be cool if they bring it back at some point.
So you liked all the jerseys, so that means you liked the Mighty Ducks and you liked the Canucks jerseys.
I like the Mighty Ducks.
Oh,
I do like the Mighty Ducks. Cause
after you get off the phone today, lose my number for 2 weeks, please. Okay?
It's so off the board. it's going to become popular at some point. I like it. And the Canucks one is okay, but to that point, my little guy loves the color scheme on the Canucks one. So he thought that was cool. So that's a win for them as well.
See, I like some of what the Leafs did, Razor. The blue on blue is interesting to me, in maybe a not so good way, but I like the crest because it's the one that they had the last time they won the Stanley Cup. My only thought is with the white stripe down the arms and the maple leaf on the shoulders, that takes us right back to the 80s. And that feels like the one decade, if you're old enough as a Leafs fan, that's the one decade you're trying to forget.
You want to leave the 80s in the 80s, right?
Like outside of like Wendell Clark getting drafted. Or Rick Vive scoring 50 goals a few times. There wasn't a lot to love about that decade.
No, and I remember the back end of that decade, and certainly wasn't a lot of fun for Leafs fans. I guess they had to find a way to get the white in, because I agree. I like the blue on blue. I like the big, huge crest on the front. So I guess that, you know, you put the white stripe down the side. I guess that's their only option. But I guess you would want to leave the 80s. It's a good point, Scott. You don't want to leave that. You want to leave it there.
What would you do, Razor, as a player, if you're a player right now? You just signed a new brand new CBA deal with the league, and then they're coming back 4 months later, and they want a new deal. What are you thinking?
I know it's tough. It's wild, and I'm a player union guy. I sat out a year and sacrificed a whole bunch of money for the union, and I'm pro player. The caveat to all that is this is something completely different. This is a situation where you could always question the owners when they said they're not making enough money and this isn't fair. In this situation, I think it's pretty obvious the owners have lost a lot of money. A lot of people are losing a lot of money in this scenario throughout entertainment, throughout travel, throughout these service industries. So as a former player, I'm not as offended with them coming back and saying, hey, listen, we didn't see this coming. I suppose... When they were negotiating the bubble, they should have maybe planned out for not having a whole season this year and gone backwards from that instead of being a little bit excited or a little bit more positive about how the season could start in December or November, however they were thinking in August. But I can see how the owners are saying, listen, this is not what we expected even 4 months ago. I don't think on March 12th any of us thought we'd be sitting here on November 12th still in a very similar situation to, you know, from 7-8 months prior. So I have some sympathy towards the owner's side in the fact that things have been changing very quickly by the week in this pandemic across the world.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So in that way, I understand the situation's changed. As a player, that doesn't help me. That doesn't make me happier. But in this situation, compared to a lockout, I trust the owners a little bit more.
Right, and I'm always pro player, Razor, and I say that. But I will agree with you on this point. Like, we want to sit here and be cynical or assume that the owners had the worst instincts or the commissioner had the worst instincts back when they were negotiating the new or retrofitted CBA in July, but there was just so much uncertainty. And I would imagine that if Gary Bettman and the owners had gone with an even more nuclear option gone to the table in June with an even more nuclear option, like the true worst case scenario that maybe is playing out now, players would have been like, whoa. Like, you want 30-40% escrow, or you want deferrals, this, that, and the other thing. It would have been a non-starter. So we can quibble over whether, well, why are they coming back to us now wanting another renegotiation only 4 months after we nailed down a new CBA, effectively? Well, if they'd gone with the original proposal of a doomsday scenario, it probably wouldn't have even gotten off the ground.
That's right. There's no bubble playoffs. Then all of that revenue's gone, and then the owners are going to try and make that up at some point as well. So correct. I just feel like this is such a, it's just so different from a normal lockout. It's so different from a contentious point of view. I can't imagine the owners are coming in trying to really stiff arm these guys for something that, you know, I know there's owners that don't want to even play any games this year. There's a few owners that are saying, listen, this doesn't make any sense to play any games for me for the next season. So if you're a player in that situation, that would make me nervous as well on that side. Listen, let's try and figure this out, because it is going to take a year or two to get back to where we were prior on March 11th of 2020.
Couple texts before you go, Razor. Brian says the Leafs should have put Carlton the Bear on their retro jersey. Well, I mean, you'd be up for that, right? Because you're a Pooh Bear fan.
Yeah, Carlton might not make the list on my end on that one. Carlton's he's a great mascot. I don't think he gets a lot of love all the time, though, does he?
No, well, yeah, because he's kind of there. I've just always thought it's always funny watching him when he's sitting down in the corner and the Leafs score a goal and then everybody throws their arms up and then suddenly this big, massive white bear head jumps up.
Well,
imagine being on mushrooms watching a Leafs game and that thing happens when Leafs score a goal. Like, what the hell is that, man?
Yeah, what's that like, Ziggy?
Yeah, what is that? What are you saying? He would know?
Yeah, don't they put Carlton in like that lift, that scaffold lift, the automatic when they score in the one end? Isn't that what they do now at Scotia? He's like in the lift that goes up in the one corner and they bring him back down.
I'll have to watch for that next time.
That's how he gets raised up. Yeah, he's an underrated mascot.
Last one for you, Michael Chorney and Barry. Leafs should have put Ziggy's face grinning, holding up that $100 McDonald's gift card on their reverse retro jersey. These are some deep jersey
dives.
He
really wants that gift card, that guy.
Andrew Raycroft joined the guys on Leadoff. Quick, couple thoughts on that quickly. Carlton the Bear is an underrated mascot. I have a soft spot for him. I love polar bears. Maybe that's why. I've had an affinity from them since I was a small child.
Oh.
And two, quick mascot story. When I was at school at Humber College, they let us call a Marlies game for the radio and television program there. They gave us a sideline reporter.
Sick.
And he conducted a minute and a half interview with Duke the Dog, who could not speak. It is the greatest broadcasting feat I have ever seen in my life. I need to dig those tapes up.
That's incredible. And next Saturday morning, Gunner, we need to play you doing play-by-play of the Marlies in college. We need that.
It's all out there. There's rock. I'll try to find it. There's rock. I called a couple of rock games as well. Coming for you, Andy McNamara. What else is coming?
That's a great thing for – that's a great – sorry, go ahead. Let's go. It's fine.
Yeah, it's okay. Saturday morning. We're going to talk about that a little more. Sam's going to beak me about my early college days, and we're going to get into the NHL. A couple hours left on Sportsnet today.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
First hour of the program, just trucking along here. We're having fun. We're talking mascots. They got into the reverse retro jersey thing with Andrew Raycroft on Leadoff. We just heard from that there. Quick thing on that, McKee. You were doing Hockey Central for a lot of this week, producing that. I believe that was where I heard this, that the guys were joking about the Islanders should have done the fisherman logo, but made him shave the beard. And honestly, that was one of the funnier things I heard on the airwaves this week. Definitely.
Yeah, that
was
cool.
that was on HC? Did I get that right?
Yeah, it was with Colby, who's honestly one of the biggest beauties in the world. But yeah, that we could quickly chat about that before we head off here. But yeah, that jersey that the Islanders put out, it's just their jersey. Like, come on, guys, come on. Like, I know there's been a ton of jersey talk, but I got to make that point. It's like, come on, why did you do that? Like, you could have done that jersey with orange, so it's a little spicier at least. Like, they just put out the jersey they have. It's actually not even a third jersey. It's just the same jersey. So. Yeah, that got looed up hard. There was a lot of Lou involved.
Lou's gonna Lou, and I honestly love him for it. He is who he is, and he'll never change. If I was an Isles fan, maybe I'd want something a little different, but looking at afar, I'll definitely like to laugh at that. What else I like to do? I like to talk Raptors, and I love to talk Raptors with Brad Fay. We're gonna do that next here on Sportsnet today.
It all happens in real time. Don't be the last to know. Listen here first. Sportsnet today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me on a lovely Saturday morning. I got to hand it to the NBA. They tried to get us some news before bedtime instead of going with the midnight opening for when teams could start to talk to players. They bumped it up to 6, but I was still up last night trying to chase down all those deals. Someone who's very informed always on all things NBA, Raptors, definitely NBA. I don't know that we've ever asked our next guest, Brad Fay, hey, Brad, did you see this game? And he didn't at least see a little snippet of it. Always thrilled to talk with him. Brad, how you doing this morning?
I'm great. I agree with you. That was the smart move, especially with the short window that started a little earlier. It's kind of funny that midnight, and now we know if they did start at midnight, it'd be like Midnight Madness back in the college days. People would stay up all night if they, as long as there's guys on there breaking news, they'll watch it.
That's right. That's right. We love news in this business, and I think hopefully maybe we'll get some today about Fred VanVleet. We know he's going to – I think that's the place we got to start. Obviously, that's the biggest kind of tentpole issue for the Raptors in free agency. Serge Ibaka, big one as well. But, you know, Fred's going to meet with some teams today. It does seem like the Raptors are the front runners, but I got to be honest, given all the money splashed around yesterday, we know the Knicks still have a ton of cap space. Not that I don't think the Raptors are front runners, but I guess my question really is, should they have a walkaway number? Is there a number for Fred that just gets too high, too astronomical, or is it kind of too important to keep this thing rolling that you've got with this kind of Raptors core?
Yeah, well, it's tough. It's two parts for me with Fred because he's in a great position of strength with the Raptors and maybe not as strong of a position as he would be otherwise in the NBA, given there's just not enough teams that have enough money to pay him that much more than the Raptors would, because I think if it was complete open season and there was a lot more teams with that kind of money, that he would get some kind of crazy offer. Just seeing some of the money that some of the guys signed for yesterday, that, you know, you would think that are barely contributors and making way more than Fred did last year. So I'm with you. I think it's in Toronto's corner to make it happen. I think that he's never going to take a hometown discount, but I think if everything is just at least close to where it is, then he's more comfortable where he is and will stay in Toronto. I'm pretty confident of that one, but don't go to the bank with it, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, I just, you know, you just put it perfectly there, Brad, and it's kind of what I was thinking about when I was waking up this morning and reading all these numbers that these guys got. Like, I don't know if I was expecting it to be cheaper. I don't know, with the pandemic, like, I was expecting these numbers to not be so astronomical, but it's not going to be a small contract that gets Fred VanVleet back here. Like, I know we've kind of just talked about it, but like that, those, some of those numbers, like a guy like Malik Beasley got 4 years, $80 million from the Minnesota Timberwolves. So to get a guy like Fred, you're going to be going higher and higher and higher here. Like, it's going to be a big contract to bring him back here. I always knew it was going to be, but maybe I wasn't prepared for how big it actually is going to be.
No, I agree. Cause that was kind of the number that everybody talked about, that all the, you know, up until a few months ago, as the Raptors would go 4 and 80. That was kind of the entry level, and saying, you know, if somebody goes 4 years and 100, would Fred have to leave? And so now we're talking, it's going to be somewhere between that to get him to stay. And here's a guy, you know, made $9 million the last couple of years and gets an NBA Finals MVP vote. And it, as funny as that sounded, that sounded like a good bargain when they talked about that deal, the last one he signed. Now you realize how cheap it was in reference and how much they were getting for Fred VanVleet. So it's time for him to get paid, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I know this stuff doesn't really matter, but like that picture of him screaming at Oracle with a bandage on his face, like that's an iconic picture now in Raptors history. And, you know, you talk about no hometown discounts. I think the only way maybe they could have got one is if they became the Rockford Raptors this year. Do you think there's any kind of play with the fact that they're going to be playing in Tampa, whether that helps or hurts them? And, you know, it's just the uncertainty of whether you're there for half a year or part of this year or who knows how long. How do you think that will play with not so much Fred and Serge, because they know what this team's about, but, you know, if they're trying to bring guys in from outside of the organization?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking of that yesterday. It kind of goes back, like, remember Tracy McGrady saying he wanted out of Toronto because it was too cold. So here you go. You know, it's not cold in Tampa. And it's like, if they were living in a bubble, because that was the initial thought, I think, for everybody, and myself included, when I thought, oh, they got to play in somewhere else, and then Tampa – you know, becomes a front runner before they announce that it was. And you're like, you know, that's a real disadvantage because, you know, you wonder if that affected Pascal and the bubble and all that. And then you realize, no, it's not going to be a bubble. They're all going to rent homes. They're all going to be independent with their families. They're living the life that they're allowed to live everywhere else under restrictions of, you know, where you wear a mask and everything along those lines. I don't think it'll be a factor that someone going and a sign because they get to play in Tampa for a year, but you're half a year, which I think it's going to be. I just think it won't be a factor because people think, well, you get out of the Toronto winter, and there's a, you know, half the cities in the NBA have the kind of winter that Toronto does. So it's kind of a break for those guys. Get some sun, get to play golf, they feel good, and there's no fans anyway. So I don't think it's going to make as big of a difference as it would if they were actually bubbled down there.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think that a lot of those guys would probably prefer to play in Florida and then in Toronto in the winter. But I digress on that one. I wanted to ask you about Serge, Brad, because, you know, there's been so much talk about how important, you know, Fred VanVleet was to this team. And, you know, how, like, you know, he talked about the MVP, the finals MVP vote there and what he brings to the team. But, man, Serge has been so huge for this franchise over the past two seasons. And, like, last year was amazing. The year before that, obviously, was amazing in the playoffs. You think of Game 7 against Philly. You think of a few games in the playoffs where they wouldn't have won without him. And I honestly think that him leaving could be as equally as impactful as Fred VanVleet, because he has just been such a huge part of the Raptors. And I don't feel like it's getting talked about enough. Do you think I'm out on a limb here? Or do you think that, you know, him leaving is as impactful as Fred?
Yeah, I think it's become that way. And especially with the likely that Gasol won't be back, and what we saw from Gasol, you know, as much as he gave, and again, the Raptors don't win that championship without him. No. But this is this leaves the, you know, a complete hole at center if they don't bring Serge back. And it's also, it's suddenly, you know, it's great how players get reinvented, and maybe it's just because the game is where we thought that he was done, and, you know, he's using the term dinosaur. It sounds like you're being trying to be stupid funny with the Raptors, but that's what people thought a couple of years ago with Serge. And now the way the game has changed, you know, he's the prototypical center that, you know, 6'10", 6'11", that he can shoot, he can guard guys, he can handle the ball, he can, you know, so many ways that he can contribute, and he just plays his butt off like not many players that we've seen. It seems like he found something too, another gear in that championship year when he was asked to take a secondary role, so to speak, and he's lived up to everything. So I think it's an interesting one. I think there'll be more suitors, so to speak, for Serge, but he may not get as much money as Fred, but I think there's going to be a lot more interest. There's a lot of people that realize they could start a year without a big guy up front, because they're just few and far between now.
Talking to Brad Fay here on Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Obviously, you know, you mentioned Serge and everything he brings on the court. If they lose out on him, they're basically looking for exactly that type of player. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned how quickly perceptions change. It's like Serge at power forward a couple of seasons ago, this guy is cooked, and then you move him to the five, and oh man, it's funny how things fit perfectly. But speaking of fit, I feel like outside of, you know, Masai and Kyle Lowry, I don't know that there's, you know, and Fred VanVleet is right on par with him, but it feels like Serge is such a big part of, you know, we talk so much about in this league culture, how important it is. It feels like Serge is a really big part of that. I mean, maybe this stuff doesn't matter, but it feels like he did a great job of kind of bringing some of the younger guys out of his shell. We know him and OG had the whole thing this year. It just feels like he's a massive part of not just what they do on the court, but the culture that they're trying to sell everybody, including maybe someone next summer on.
Yeah, and I think he's, if you ask a lot of people, you know, he's become one of the most popular players because people know him, you know, beyond his on-court stuff with his fashion and with his cooking and his humor and that kind of stuff. And it's just, I've said it so many times before, but I firmly believe it isn't. This doesn't apply to Fred, but guys like Serge, guys that are international players, they just seem to really embrace Toronto. And that's why, you know, we kept hearing with Giannis being a possibility, because it's like, if you're coming, you know, if you're an American and you're used to, and you want the system, whether it's Antonio Davis raising the kids at school and you want your temperatures and everything that you're used to, you come from Europe, it's all that way anyway, or you come from Africa. It's like Toronto just seems to be a perfect melting pot. And it seems like Serge really found himself not only professionally, but also personally. I don't know, you know, we didn't get to see him much off the court, obviously, before he came here, but it just seems like the last couple of years watching the growth and his comfort level of, he really likes to be a citizen of this city.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you a draft question, Brad, because I was fascinated by the Raptors' first-round pick, Malachi Richardson. Malachi Richardson's the guy who's playing him. Malachi Flynn.
Yeah, Flynn.
You know, it's 9-11 on a Friday, on a Saturday morning here. give me a little bit of a break. But
it's going to be Malachi within about a week. That's all everyone's going to call him, so you don't have to worry about the last.
It's a great name, Malachi. Like, it really is. It's one of those names that, you know, if you become – it is a first name. Just go with that. But the Raptors have really seemed to, you know, pick out – not an inefficiency here, but they've sort of figured out what their type of guy is, you know, that they like to kind of build their guard position around. And I don't know if it's an inefficiency, but they've found these sort of hard-nosed, defensive, stalwart point guards that can kind of shoot it. And it really that are sort of on the smaller side. I'm really fascinated by the Malachi pick, and I'm interested to see what he's going to become.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think you nailed it. When it gets that deep in the draft, and this is what the Raptors have done so well. You think how, you know, they've been working on a 7-year playoff streak coming into this year. So obviously they haven't been picking high, and they keep coming up with guys like Pascal and like OG. But it gets to that late. It seems like, if there's any question of the talent, the skill, they go with the character of the guy, and they had great meetings. Malachi Flynn said the same thing. I heard a guy on, it's very interesting because there's so many of these blogger insider guys. I was listening to NBA radio, and I didn't hear what his name was because they kind of said it quick when he left, but they asked him about the draft, and he says, this is not a guy from Toronto. This is an American-based guy. He said, my favorite player in the draft is Malachi Flynn. He said, I just love watching this guy. And winner led a great team that had that long winning streak. And he just says everything he does that, you know, being a defensive player of the year, that he thinks they got a steal, which is cool to hear. And I also think that he just is that it sets him up perfectly for, you know, it's insurance. If they happen to not have Fred, he's not going to be a guy that's going to make that impact right away. But then you just look at the whole scale down the line. Once Kyle leaves, if Fred stays and Fred takes over, then you've got Malachi coming in, whether he plays with or behind. The same situations they've had with Fred and Kyle. So it's certainly part of their identity.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just, you know, it's interesting because you talk about – I've been doing a ton of reading on him ever since they drafted him. And, you know, I'm not a big college basketball guy. But by all accounts, like you said, he was, you know, leading this team that was sort of kind of looking at this year's tournament as maybe a possible team that's going to be like kind of have the potential to go deep. And, you know, let's say the college tournament happens, Magic Madness happens, the Raptors might not get him at 29, you know, like if he goes into that, we know how much that sort of has impact on the way people draft players. If he went in there and was a stalwart and they make it to the Elite Eight or something, there's no way they get him at 29. So no NBA tournament could have been a little bit of a coup for the Raptors to be able to get him at 29.
Yeah, and I agree that it made the draft really weird for a lot of us too, because so much of that exposure comes in the NCAA tournament. And I just found myself, you know, other than having to read up on guys, it was like at first glance when I looked at the projected top 20 or 30, it's like you used to, you know, know them all inside out. You used to know the 56 pick because you saw him playing. And so that was weird, but that's a great point. I think that's fair to say. But then you think when Fred, with Wichita State, when they made that deep run, very similar team to San Diego State, and then still nobody took Fred, but it's worked out well for him. So there's similarities. I like so much that the last time we got a guy from San Diego State, it worked out pretty well in Toronto. So that's cool
that's
too. But you know,
point.
Bring Kawhi back next year. Let's start that rumbling.
Yeah.
Probably never met the guy, you know. But let's get the San Diego State kids.
No, pour gas on that fire. Recruiting tool. I love it, Brad. But yeah, you mentioned the draft and how weird it was. Like, just think about the kind of bones that were there for this draft. It's like the Warriors are picking second overall. They take this 6'11 center who can run like a gazelle and can shoot it a little bit. It's like that should be the sexiest storyline going, or, you know, ruining the NBA, depending on what side of the fence you sit on. And it just felt like it just kind of almost went, and I don't want to say went by the wayside. We talked about it. We watched it. But, you know, in any other year where that guy was playing, and I know, you know, everything with Wiseman was a little different. He ended up leaving school. But it just feels like in any other year, that would have been an incredible – like, we would not have stopped talking about that. It almost would have made the NFL take a backseat in kind of general sports talk.
Yeah, and then I guess with the whole short window of the free agency coming up and the way everything's odd on the calendar, that I think everybody was – I know myself, tuning into the draft, I almost was hoping to hear of some kind of trade or some kind of, you know, rumbling of something happening with one of the big names. And obviously that's certainly been the case. None of them have moved yet. But I think that kind of took the headlines as well, because you realize this the draft was just going to be a small part of the shuffling. But remember when Golden State, when we knew they had the second pick, and there was that talk of, you know, Wiggins and the second pick for Pascal, which that was during the you know, the playoffs right after the Raptors were knocked out and all that stuff. Nothing ever happened from that. And certainly the Warriors time frame with the poor Klay Thompson, if that had happened the day before, then their approach may have been different. They would have probably been packaging that pick and everything else. So hard to believe it. Did off topic quickly, but that, those two free throws that Klay Thompson hit, which were some of the gutsiest things I can remember seeing. I was in the building that night. I was just, you know, it was spine tingling. And then that's going to be the last shots he takes for like at least 2 years in the NBA. It just, and for that franchise, the way everything went from that night, it's anyway off top. But he's such a good, Klay Thompson's one of those guys everybody loves to watch play. So it's a loss for everybody.
Yeah, Klay Thompson's probably, yeah, he's definitely my top five guys that you love to watch in the NBA. And it's, can you imagine, Brad, like, I've never had a really long-term injury like that. You know, I've had a few sprained ankles in my day, nothing too serious. But, you know, can you imagine tearing up your knee and then rehabbing it for however many long, and then you're finally getting back into the, you know, playing in some pickup games, and you tear your Achilles. Like, I know he's an extremely well, compensated guy. The money thing, you know, everyone, oh, he's rich, but, like, what that would do to you mentally would be so, so hard. Like, it would be so much adversity to face that and try to come through it. I feel awful for Klay Thompson.
Yeah, and apparently how hard he worked to get back, they talked about it, as they all do. I think that's what we don't give enough credit for those guys. Like you said, they're getting paid anyway, but they want to play and they know the window is short. And I still wonder, too, if since it's the other leg, that it, whether it's the knee that he's favoring the one, you know, you think of these things, but it's all doesn't matter now. It's too bad. Because what did they go from being, I think they were the second or third pick as favorite to win the NBA championship to way down the line. Now that's how quick it is. The NBA, you can't afford the loss of one of your two best players. It just doesn't happen.
No. Yeah, and it's funny, even when people kind of got their backs up against the Warriors and they didn't like the super team, Klay never got any of that stink on him because he's just so ho-hum, good
loved.
Guy. Speaking of good guys, Brad Fay, want to give you credit. Don't want people to not know who was given this excellent basketball analysis. Brad, always love
like
chatting with you. Thanks so much.
I couldn't hear the analyst's name right the other day, so yeah, it's good to get it out there. Anyway, have fun. Enjoy today, guys. It should be a lot of fun. Let's hope there's good news for Toronto by the end of the day.
Thanks, Brad. There he goes, Brad Fay, Sportsnet, NBA host, NBA analyst, but again, all-around good guy. Now, McKee, I know there's a signing we didn't talk about that you want to talk about, but I want to jump back to Malachi Flynn. People are saying he's hard-nosed.
Like the cut of his jib.
I do like the cut of his jib. Now, I've never seen him play, but I know he's hard-nosed because of the family picture they put up of him. Anytime you, your dad, and your brother roll into Sears for a family portrait just wearing the tank tops that we're not allowed to call by another name anymore, that is quite the look, and you know that guy is, at if nothing else, he's gritty.
He told the story of that on Tim and Sid, because I believe it was Sid asked him, and he's like, I got to ask you about this picture. Like, were you upset that was circulating on your draft night, basically? And what it was is that his grandma, every single year, they had to take a picture. It was like yearly thing. They had to go out and take a picture. His grandma was like super adamant about it. So he was like, by the time we're getting to this age, it's like, we've done every photo. Like, we've done like what other photo, like every year. I could just see it every 5 years, maybe. You know, every 3 years, but every year it's like you're just taking the same picture over and over. So they decided to spice it up, and they went with the tank tops, which I absolutely love. But I, you know, I'm an expert on Malachi now. I've watched a few YouTube highlights, mixtapes. He's cut from the cloth. Like, it's just, this is, the Raptors now have a type, like I was talking about with Brad, and he's that type. And I love it. I think it's a bit of an inefficiency. The smaller point guard, that's maybe not someone who can be the lead dog on a championship team, but a guy who's going to be a really solid contributor, who's going to give you an effort every night, good shooter, good defender, hard nose, winner. I love what the Raptors' drafting strategy has become. I love when a team has a type in the draft and they do it well. It's like the Steelers drafting receivers and linebackers. It's like they're just better than everybody else at it. It's just something that they know how to do it, right? And you look at the Raptors and they're drafting these gritty point guards. I love gritty point guards. Like, the fact that that's their type, it's incredible to me.
Well, it's you talk about type, and honestly, the Raptors are becoming that buddy of yours. It's like, oh, I've started seeing someone new. It's like, hold on, let me guess. No, don't tell me. We know. And that's exactly what the Raptors are. And hey, speaking of gritty, the Lakers got a little more gritty yesterday, and they stole from the Clippers, which makes it doubly good for them in the Battle of LA there. Inking on Montrezl Harrell, there's rumors about Gasol there. Obviously, he won't be nearly as impactful, but boy, the rich get richer. Defending champs, adding the sixth man and runner up for sixth man of the year award.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of people, you know, the analytics community wasn't a big fan of his defense when he was playing in the playoffs, and I think there was a lot of sort of detractors from Montrezl Harrell, but I really think that, you know, Doc Rivers watching those series when they lost to the Nuggets, right, after they blew the 3-1 lead, and watching him play, they were kind of using him as like the focal point of their defense against, like, you know, Nikola Jokic, which probably wasn't a great idea in retrospect looking back on it. So I think, you know, I really do love what Montrezl Harrell brings. I love, like, speaking of types, I love that type of guy. You know, this, like, the off-the-bench energy dunker, fly to the rim, flying around defensively. Like, I love that kind of guy. And I think if you put him in the Lakers system, which is already an extremely defensive-oriented team, like, they had the best defense in the league this year. I know they lost Dwight Howard yesterday, but, I mean, that doesn't really matter too much in terms of your defense. I really think that he's going to be a perfect fit there. But I would be pretty chapped if I was on the Clippers. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I really feel like this – I know Montrezl Harrell isn't necessarily, like, a superstar, but I think he's the type of guy that if he flips teams, that's – like, he's a heart-and-soul kind of guy. That's going to inject some rivalry. That's going to inject some nastiness into that sort of Lakers-Clippers sort of rivalry. And I, you know what? I really like the fit for the Lakers. I think he's going to be sick there. So, yeah, love it. Schroeder and him, they just got a lot – I think – talk about teams that got a lot better. They got a lot better getting Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell, in my opinion.
We always joke about how what you would pay to get an uncensored feed of, you know, NBA, NHL, whatever games – I don't even want to know what Pat Beverly is going to say. And the first time those guys play each other, it's like you want to talk about a type. Boy, the Raptors, he would fit in just fine there.
I actually can't stand Pat Beverly. He's the fakest tough guy in the league. I honestly can't stand him. And it's just like, oh, we get it, buddy. Like, you're the tough guy that talks a lot. Like, I don't know. I feel like you can do what he does without being so extra about it. How's that sound? Is that okay? Is that fair?
Yeah, that is totally fair, actually. And, you know, we will have a little more discussion on the NBA. You mentioned a name there. I didn't pick up on it, but I'm going to mention it to you in the hot new game, Sweeping the Nation.
Yes.
Big deal or no deal. We'll get into that when we continue on Sportsnet today.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet today. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. A little different time slot for us, but just warning you, you'll be getting more of this 1 week from now. Going to try to dig up some of my old college play-by-play for you. I apologize in advance, I think, both for not being able to find it and if you actually have to hear it. One of those things I'll be apologizing for next weekend. But right now, we're going to play a little game. Now, my lovely co-host put on his chef's hat, cooked up this lovely little game. I think we played it for the first time a couple of Mondays ago. Is that right,
yep.
McKee?
That is exactly right.
Now look, here's the thing about guys who end up making radio their career. We think we're creative, but not really. So this game is called, McKee, what's your game called?
Big deal or no deal, you know?
And definitely has nothing to do with Deal or No Deal, the television show host.
No, it has everything to do with that.
Okay, there we go. We're just going to lean into it.
And it's an extremely topical reference. You know, everybody just loves Deal or No Deal. It's the most popular, game show on the networks these days. Howie Mandel still crushing it. So, is it still a show? Don't think so. But Big Deal or No Deal, basically we just get to talk about if things are a big deal or not. That's the gist of the game, but I love it.
Side note, what happened? I feel like game shows used to be very big. Like when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came out, that was the hottest thing in the streets. It's like when the guy saved the phone a friend
call
for his million-dollar question just to be like, hey, Dad, I'm about to be a millionaire. Like,
what was that guy's name? John Carpenter? Is that right?
That, you know what? I actually think that is right.
good job by you, I think, but also you, if you can remember that and not other things, maybe that's a problem. I don't know, but
I'm Googling right now.
That is one of the all-time, I can't believe we're talking about this, but here we are. That is
it
one
is
of the
John
all-time,
Carpenter. Wow, that's some deep, deep stuff in my brain, you know, like I can barely remember, to like bring my keys with me from like my house, but and Derek just buzzed my ear and said, what did I have for dinner yesterday? I can remember that. I did have, I had pizza from a lovely little spot around here, but I had pizza, I've completely forgotten what we were talking about because I was thinking about John Carpenter and pizza. So continue, Gunner.
Well, I was just going to say, like, we've seen the call your shot moments. We weren't alive for it, but Babe Ruth did a famous one. There's been plenty of things, but that's as good as it gets in the world of competition. Calling your dad to tell him, hey, I'm about to win $1 million. Boy, that had
pretty
to feel
sweet.
Amazing. Dad was probably scared though. If dad knows him, he's like, oh, come on. Like if I called my dad, no longer with us, if I called my dad and said that, he'd be like, son, focus, pay attention, call someone smart. Don't screw this up. Apparently John Carpenter, a little smarter than me. What we're going to do, we're going to get into our game, Deal or No Deal. Boy, that was a sojourn. We're back on the rails here. You mentioned a name. So how it works, I say a thing, we agree or disagree, whether it's a big deal or no deal. We'll start with the NBA. You mentioned this move in the last block. We were talking to Brad there. I think it's a more minor move, but you tell me. Dwight Howard leaving the Lakers and signing with the 76ers, big deal or no deal?
I think that's no deal. I really think that's not a big deal at all. He was just pretty much a butcher towards the end of the Lakers thing. Like, he was just bonking guys on the head, you know. He wasn't anything to be, I don't think that's a big deal at all. He's just a guy that, at this point of his career, is not a important contributor to it. I think he's just going to be a bench guy, you know. So I'm not really thinking that's a big deal at all. What about you?
I agree with everything you said, except for I think it's a big deal. The 76ers were finally getting themselves back on track. They got an adult in the room in Doc Rivers. They're starting to take some new stance. And don't get me wrong, I like Joel Embiid. I do. But we've heard it a million times, whether it's in the NBA or in the NFL, you can only have so many knuckleheads. And again, I like Embiid, but mixing him up with Howard, I don't know. It just feels like playing with a little bit of fire there to me. So I don't think it's no deal. I think it's a big deal because I have to be honest, if you're trusting the process, you just threw a little gasoline on it, as far as I'm concerned.
That is a good point that I really, you know, I should have thought of when it comes to Dwight Howard. That, you know, is it really worth it to bring him into your team, especially when you have a guy like that? Like, LeBron was there, and he still was kind of he was on the border of being a nincompoop. Let's just say that. So I think not having LeBron around might be a bit of an issue for him. But yeah. Just to quickly go back on the Sixers, I do like what they're doing, and I really like that Seth Curry trade, and I also really like them being able to get rid of Al Horford and bring in Danny Green. I'm also surprised that Danny Green, this is the first time Danny Green's played for a Daryl Morey team. That's surprising to me. Seems like the perfect guy for Daryl Morey, but anyways, yeah, I digress. What's your next one, Gunner?
Well, you know what? This one, I'm adding one more, a little audible here. We're going to stick with the NBA.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know how to necessarily quantify this, but I feel like this is what is happening. Big deal or no deal, the Thunder are stripping any and all talent away from our boys, Lu Dort and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They are. I know the rebuild. I know everything's happening, and I like both of those guys. I love what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander does. I'm a little concerned about him not having the, I don't want to say security blanket, because I think he's past that point. You want to trade Chris Paul, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. But you start stripping away Steven Adams, and you start, it just feels like you're really kind of stripping away a lot of the kind of guardrails on that nice those nice two young Canadian pieces. So for me, I say big deal that the Thunder are jettisoning all this talent away from our fine young Canucks.
Okay, so that's a good point that I didn't really think of about our young Canucks. So I will say big deal. But I think it's just a bigger deal because they don't have any basketball players on their basketball team. Like, if you held a gun to my head right now and said, hey, man, who's on the Thunder? I don't know. Like, who is on the Thunder? Like, they feels like every time I look at my phone, it's like, oh, they traded Kelly Oubre was on the Thunder. Like, Danny Green was on the Thunder. Like, who plays for the Thunder? That's a fun thing to talk about because they have all they have a weird team now. I guess Al Horford's like, is he there still? Like, did they trade him? They flip him?
I don't know.
They maybe he plays for the Warriors now. I have no idea. I can't keep track. So yeah, I think it's a big deal because it's the two Canadian kids. It's Al Horford and it's a bunch of picks wearing basketball jerseys. That's their team now. So I don't know. Like I understand what Sam Presti's doing here. Like I really do, and you know. I think when you're that sort of team that you have to maximize your shots at stars because I think the only way you're going to get it is through the draft. I don't think you're really going to lure a lot of big-name free agents to Oklahoma City. But, like, these might be going a little too deep in this because they were serviceable last year. They were a good team. Like, they were in the playoffs. You know, they had that series, like, where they were right in it. So, I don't know. I kind of like that direction. How many picks do you need? Why can't you just sort of be this scrappy, you know, middle of the playoff race sort of team? I don't know. They're obsessed with picks over there. Sam Presti, just a pick machine, loves picks, loves nothing more than picks. So I don't know. I don't know who plays for the Thunder. I don't know anything about that team anymore. Not Kelly Oubre, not Danny Green. Just don't know. So it's a big deal because our boys, Lou Dort, who I love, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who have no teammates now. Just Al Horford, and that's it.
I saw a great tweet last night breaking down the winners and losers of free agency, and one of the losers was any 6'9", 14-year-old who doesn't want to one day live in Oklahoma City. Those are the losers last night because start investing in real estate now.
I tried to sneak in a sip of coffee, and you got me because that's a great joke. It's true. It's like, oh wow, man. Like, yeah, 14. You're going to be drafted by the Thunder. So yeah,
the hottest real estate agent in Oklahoma City should be pitching his services to just the top 10 of the, I don't know, 2025 draft class right now because they're all going to be there, definitely. So, yeah, let's hope they get some talent there. I guess if I'm looking for a silver lining in that, hey, what better way to spread your wings and see exactly what you are than to have to do it all by yourself because it looks like that's going to happen. Okay, switching gears a little bit. Now, this from earlier in the week, big deal or no deal, Scott Boras praising the Blue Jays, quote, they're going to be one of the organizations that sits atop the aggressive markets in baseball. Now, let me try to clean up that agent speak for you.
Jeez, my eyes just crossed.
They're going to splash a little cash, it sounds like. Big deal or no deal that Scott, not big deal or no deal that they might do it, big deal or no deal that Scott Boras is saying it.
Deal.
I think it's
no deal.
Oh, whoa. Howie Mandel from the clouds. I think that is a big deal. I do. I really do. Because Scott Boras has never been one to sort of, you know, mince words. Is that a good way to put it, Gunnar?
That is a great way to...
And the fact that he went on a Toronto radio station was willing to say that tells me that they are doing this and they are looking to spend big. But I talked about this last on Monday with Show when we did. To just do it. Like, if you have all this money, if you're so rich, be the ones who set the market. Get out ahead of this and do it. Secure your guys. Spend the money. Do it. Scott Boras is saying you're going to do it. Everybody's saying you're going to do it. So just do it. I don't understand what everything has to – maybe that's just coming from a guy who's starved for some Blue Jays news, and I'm just, like, frothing at the mouth for it. That could certainly be part of this. But maybe just sign a guy. Like, see how it feels. That's not Robbie Ray. Maybe sprinkle in a little, you know – maybe George Springer, maybe a Colton Wong. Just sprinkle. See what happens.
Take the deal.
Yes. So I'm going with that. Scott Boras talking about it is a big deal. I cannot deny that. But, sign somebody, please. Just sign
somebody. I got to be honest. I'm going to go no deal here.
Really?
I think he knows what he's doing. We remember a couple years ago, oh, they have the blue flu up in Toronto, don't want to spend any money.
Look, he's such a, you know, I can't say what he is on the radio, yeah, but he is. Yeah, he's such a you-know-what. Anyways, continue.
Well, it's just, here's the thing. There are two ways to negotiate with someone. You can give him the carrot or you can give him the stick. He tried the stick a couple years ago, called him out publicly, said their name. They are not spending money. I think this is just an agent who's like, that didn't work. Maybe if I just heap praise on them, it will force them. I think the other part of this, too, is that the louder the noise gets here about the splashing of cash, the more pressure that's going to be on the front office to do it. 100%. So I think if there, it's a little bit of a big deal because of that, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm going no deal because this is just a guy who's just taken a negotiating tactic there. So I say no deal.
Okay. That's good, Gunnar. Go for it.
Okay, I got a couple more for you. I can't do this and not give you a couple of Leafs ones, even though there hasn't been any news in forever. And you know what? I'm not even going to mention Mike Babcock's name in this because I bet you thought that's where I was going. No.
Oh.
Big deal or no deal, Joe Thornton is averaging over a point per game with HC Davos.
Oh, buddy. You know where I'm going with this. That's a huge deal. That's a big, big deal. I don't know if you read Luke Fox's piece.
That's exactly what made me throw this up here. I'm all in now.
Our boy Luke Fox, you know, I love talking to him on the radio. And, I mean, he's also good at writing things. He's an excellent writer. And that story that he wrote with the GM, I'm not even going to try that Swiss GM's name. Borny tried it on air the other day, and I was like, nope, I'm not even going to try it. But great piece by Luke Fox. And I've read some stuff that Swiss league is one of the faster leagues in the world. Like, it's not like, you know, the skill level isn't really high there, but it's a fast league. And we all know what the skill level is with Joe Thornton. That's the whole reason the Leafs signed him, for the half-court offense. So the fact that he's putting up points there and looking good there, that's a big deal, baby. And, you know, I'm starting to – my hopes are way too high. I am setting my hopes, like – talk about horses are out of the barn. The horses are out of the barn with my hopes on Joe Thornton, because I'm picturing him in the half court offense, 45 points this year, just firing passes all around there. Maybe not the best in transition, but great in the half court. So give me some Joe Thornton, big deal, Gunner, and I know you agree. Give me the big deal, baby.
Take the deal.
Yeah, that's right. Open that briefcase. $1 million, Joe Thornton, lighten it up. That was exactly the thing. I've been doing everything in my power to temper my own expectations of this. Okay, this isn't my youth, Joe Thornton. Okay, this isn't him fighting Jamie Benn all those years ago. Yeah. This isn't him whipping around Boston. Okay. I mean, it's still Joe Thornton, though. And then that's exactly it. It's like, I think there is something to it. It's not just us sitting here going, oh, gee, Jumbo looks great. The fact that it's a speed league and he's able to get it done there, I think it can only mean good things. I think we all need to temper expectations just a hair. But there's definitely something to it. The fact that the fact that he can do that in a fast league, big, big deal for the Leafs, at least I hope. And maybe we'll actually get to see some hockey, because it sounds like that's been buttoned its head against the wall.
Yeah, big deal or no deal. There's not going to be any hockey this year. Big deal. Big ding, deal. Ding, ding, ding. Anyway, let's continue.
Second Leafs one for you on a similar note. It's the exact same question, just a different guy. Mikko Lehtinen lighting up the K before he ended his loan agreement with Jokerit. 8 goals, 9 assists, 17 points in 17 games played in the K, wearing those wonderful Jokerit sweaters. Big deal, deal or no deal?
Or no deal.
So dramatic, Howie. Okay, first of all, hockey fashion, that logo
Elite.
Is unbelievable. I think they could do more with the rest of the jersey. I think the rest of the jersey makes it look a little, you know, a little early 2000s piping-y, which I'm not a huge fan of. You know, I'm not a big fan of that jersey. But that logo is one of the best in all of hockey in the world. It's so good. Like, if you're making a top 10 logos in all of hockey in the world, that's in it for sure. So I love that jersey. And I have as many takes on Mikko Lehtinen as I do about the jerseys. Good jersey. Apparently good. Like, I don't really know what to expect from this guy, but it can't be bad that he was playing well. I'm not going to be like, oh, you know, he's lighting it up over there. That's definitely sort of bodes well for what he's going to do here. But I'm not going to get too fired about the KHL guys. You know, we've seen guys light it up over there. I seem to remember a guy, you know, I can't even really remember his last name or his first name, but Ozaganov, what was his first name? I can't even remember him. He was really good in the KHL. Zaitsev was really good in the KHL. Like, there's definitely a huge difference between being really good in the KHL and being really good in the NHL. But this guy, by all accounts, has a bomb from the point. He can run the second power play unit, and that's just something right there that the Toronto Maple Leafs desperately need. And I could definitely, if he's got a bomb on the point, I could see him flirting with the top unit. So I'm going to go with it because it's the Leafs, and I love getting fired up with the Leafs. I'm going big deal, but it's a slight lean to no deal, I will say.
McKee, I'm right there with you, but I have a slightly different reasoning. Now, the thing that I understand about this guy is he kind of really exploded last season. Obviously, he's been a nice player over there for a while, but he really exploded, won the Defenseman of the Year award, whatever they call it over there. Probably something named after, I don't know, Sergei Gonchar, something along those lines.
The Gonchi.
Yeah. I don't know that you want to be the Gonchi, but anyway, the fact that he backed it up is important to me. You know, anytime you have a guy, you don't like to see it in the NHL when a guy has a big season. You'd like to see a little track record. So the fact that in a weird year he was signing here, then he's back over with Joker, when maybe he wasn't expected to be. So the fact that he's able to kind of back it up, I do think it helps. And you, I know you've got to be happy about the bomb from the point, because you've been banging that probably since McCabe left, quite honestly. Because Phaneuf's doesn't count, because it was as dangerous to his own teammates as anybody else. But like, it feels like, how long has it been? Was it McCabe, the last guy that just had an absolute hammer back there?
Yeah,
Pavel
for
Kubina?
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, but like, I just, my whole philosophy, if I was a power play, you know, specialist and as a coach, like the Mark Savard of the Leafs, who, you know, now coaches the power play unit for the Blues, I've always loved, I know what they do with that top unit, and they have, you know, they have the guys all firing it around, passing it around, just using their skill. But my dream world this year is where they do the second unit, where it's more of a crash and bang unit, and they have, you know, they got Wayne Simmonds standing in front of the net, and they got our boy Mikko Lehtinen just letting it buck straight on net, aiming at, you know, at aiming at Wayne Simmonds' chest, letting it hit him, bounce in front of the net, guys jamming away. I think they have a real potential with their sort of personnel that they could have two very different looking power play units, which is something that I really believe in, is one of my philosophies when it comes to teams having a, like, hey, don't get me wrong, I don't think the Leafs really need to change up their top unit a whole lot. Like, their top unit, pretty good. It's got some guys in there that are pretty good at hockey, so I'm not concerned about that. But the second unit, for, you know, those 35, 40 seconds that they get out there, give me a little change up, and I think they have the personnel to do that this year.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're talking about the power play, but I think that goes for the entire team. It's just been one way to play for that team for so long. Even last year, it's like, whether it be Kerfoot and Kapanen or Janssen was there for a time, whatever it was, that third line was just a not as good version of the first two. It's like, we're going to go fast, we're going to zig and zag, and we're going to whip this thing around. But it's nice to kind of have a more blunt force of a type of attack that this team could have. So, yeah, I think I'm definitely there with you, McKee. Great job on the game. I love it.
Thank you. Actually,
to be perfectly honest, great job, technical director Derek Brandeo, piping in Howie Mandel. That was a surprise to me. So good job by you, Brandeo. Give yourself a round of applause there. We did talk a little NHL. I've got a couple more things to kick around
Perfect.
With you.
Love
we'll do
it.
That when we continue on Sportsnet today.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Text line's always open. I haven't thrown out the numbers. Shame on me. 590-590. Please include your name and location. I was asking Brad Fay a little earlier on in the show if there should be a walk-away number for Fred VanVleet, and Chris from Calgary texting in.
Regular texter of the show, by the way.
He loves to text. We've got Anthony and the Hammer texting it as well. But Chris from Calgary, I'd walk away from VanVleet at 30, Ibaka at 25. I don't know that I necessarily disagree, but it's the philosophical thing of where you want to go with this Raptors team. If you are, you know, dead set on keeping this thing rolling and trying to, you know, bleed everything you can out of the last couple of years of Kyle Lowry, and hey, we've been saying the last couple of years out of that guy forever, and he keeps proving us wrong. And I don't know how much longer is left, probably longer than many of us think. But if you're dead set on making that last as long as you can, I don't know that there can be a walkaway number for VanVleet, as ugly as that may get. If it gets up to the, you know, who knows what it ends up, 30, 35, that seems absurd. But what about you? Is there a walkaway number for you, McKee?
I think those are both really good. And I was just Googling what Serge made last year, and he, you know, He was signed a 3-year, $65 million contract with the Raptors. And I would picture it probably looking something like that, wouldn't you? Like, is he going to get a raise from his last contract? Like, I don't necessarily think he's going to get a raise. I'd probably say he would get a pretty similar contract to that. Wouldn't you think that?
So when it comes to Serge, it does seem like there are other suitors who are maybe happier to go longer term at something like that, whereas it feels like the Raptors, from everything we've been hearing, maybe they're more inclined to say, hey, why don't you take one at 25 or whatever it is, because they can go over the cap to sign him. It's not going to hamper them down the road. I'd be fine with that, a one-year big payment for Serge. Keep this thing rolling. But, again, please keep texting in 590-590. Please include your name and location. Now, speaking of Serge Ibaka, you know, he's a very, very mild-mannered man, very well-dressed man, very fashionable man. But you don't want to get on his bad side either. And hate is a part of his game at times. Just ask Marquise Chris on the Cavaliers there.
Or Robin Lopez.
Now, what am I saying about this? It's a transition to something I want to talk about in the NHL. There has been something missing from the league for a long time, and it's hate. And a little bit of hate goes a long way in my enjoyment of hockey. And they have talked about the idea of maybe going with these mini three-game baseball series throughout the season to try to help facilitate travel or maybe to help kind of bubble up. Personally, I'd love it, because if you're bumping, banging against somebody for three straight days, they're ugly mugs looking at you in the face-off dot, it's only going to help amp some of that stuff up. And I think, you know, it could help eliminate those kind of sleepy, you know, let's call it a sleepy February game for the Leafs against the Panthers, like we always like to say. I'd love to see it, because I really think it could kind of gin up a little more emotion in the regular season, which, quite frankly, the league's missing for me from time to time.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, if the Leafs will ever play in the Panthers again. That Raptors news, not to get too aside from your point, but
no,
I think you know, that really did seal the fact that there's probably not going to be any over-the-border travel when it comes to the NHL when it gets started here. So I think there is a chance to really get some real hate going with these Canadian teams, because, you know, if these Canadian teams are playing against each other all the time, they're just playing these games against, you're looking at the Habs or you're looking at the Oilers or you're looking, and there's already
the Chucks running around.
Honestly, and like, even when the Leafs play the Oilers play their two games a year, those games are always heated. Those guys on those teams, they know the stakes of those two fans. They know what goes into that. So, you know, like, the Leafs and Oilers aren't necessarily even really rivals, but it's just like the fan bases, the players on the teams, what people think of Matthews, what people think of McDavid. It's just such a sort of melting pot of fan hate for each team that the players feel that. And if you get that over and over and over and over, there's going to be, like, I mean, the social distancing hockey is not going to be good. There's going to be fights. This is going to get a little old school, I think. I really do think that, even though the NHL has sort of moved in the way of being a little, you know, let's say softer is the way to put it. Maybe a little nicer than it used to be. But I think that it really could get mean. I really do. The Canadian division could get ugly.
Yeah, and you know, like, you talk about what it means for those two fan bases for the Oilers and Leafs, and I think you can pretty much switch out the Oilers with any team. I don't know that it's a two-way street that the Leafs care as much, but you better believe the Canucks fans are going to be out for blood when Wayne Simmonds is running around out there and they're playing games at 4 o'clock local time because they love it oh so much. I think it's just, it's incredible. If you're going to see these teams, and again, if you're basically playing a seven-team loop, you're going to see these guys over and over and over again. And I think, why do we love the playoffs? I guess it's because of the stakes, but it's because of the type of hockey we see. And I do wonder if maybe, now granted, you cannot play with playoff emotion for 82 games or 60 or whatever the season ends up being. You can't do it. But if you can just kind of get there or somewhat close to it once in a while during the regular season, it's amazing what I think it would do for the league.
Yeah, I really do. And I've talked about this with you before in the air, but man, what a high-stakes season for the Toronto Maple Leafs and their fans.
Whoa.
Honestly, like, because there's no team in Canada that brings the vitriol like the Leafs do. The Leafs are the most hated team in Canada. All the fan bases of all the other teams can't stand the Leafs. I think the one team that maybe is the exception from that. I don't feel like there's the hate between the Flames and the Leafs fans maybe as much. I may be speaking a little bit out of turn, but yeah, the people in Calgary are probably like, wow, I hate the Leafs more than anyone. But I just, you know, I feel like every other fan base really hates the Leafs. And if the Leafs could find a way to be the best team in the Canadian division, win the Canadian division, in the only time in the history of the league that the only Canadian teams are playing against each other, That would be, like, that's borderline. Like, there's the cup, and then there's that. That would be the best bragging rights of all time. So give me that. Give me the Leafs with a chance to do that. And, I just so many stakes for the Leafs and their fans this year.
I got to be honest, and I chirp you for your soccer fandom for caring about the 97 tournaments that your beloved Chelsea Blues play in every year. But why can't we just award the Canada Cup to the winner of that division? Like, is there a reason we can't do that, and they can't play for that trophy, and it just sits at a case at lovely Scotiabank Arena when, of course, the Leafs run roughshod?
Even if they do it in a year where you're just the team with the most Canadian points, like even in a normal season where it's like the team that has the most points gets the Canada Cup, that's a great idea. How is that not a thing?
Well, I you know what? I have to say, NHL marketing department, get at me. I've been on my soapbox about the quadruple header on Canadian Thanksgiving. We got to do that. And we need the Canada Cup awarded. You know what? I'm all in on all these soccer tournaments now. Now that the Leafs are kind of involved, give me a chance to win a trophy, a little hardware for the blue and white. Let me see it. I think we just stumbled on something there. I don't know. Neither of us have any pull. You occasionally talk to Justin Bourne, sometimes even Jeff Merrick. Those guys have way more pull than us. So I don't know. Feel free to pass it along. I just want to see the idea, see the light of day. I don't care if I get credit. That's a lie. I'd like a little bit of credit. What else I'd like to do? I'd like to talk about the NFL. We haven't really done that yet. Going to get into it. A lot going on. Bills back at it this week after a bye. Big week for them. Tons going on. Great Thursday nighter to kick around as well. We will do that when we continue on Sportsnet today.
Welcome to the front lines. This is Sportsnet today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Shift change here on the show. Thank you to Technical Director Derek Brandeo shepherding us through the first couple hours of this program. Now, we got Andrew Dutch Holland at the wheel. Great song choice to kick us off. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee here on Sportsnet today. Time to dive into the NFL. Plenty to get going. I want to start with that great Thursday nighter. Could have been a little better if Murray wasn't so banged up. Joining us now to discuss it, NFL writer for CBS Sports, Jordan DeGianni. Jordan, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Absolutely. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
We're fired up. I got to be honest, NBA free agency was the wind we needed in our sails in this little bit of a slower time in the sports calendar, but obviously plenty going on in the NFL as well. I do want to start with you at that Thursday nighter. You know, it feels like the Seahawks and Cardinals had that amazing game earlier in the year, another close one on Thursday. It feels to me like that's a kind of budding rivalry, and the reason I love it so much is because it feels like it's kind of the best of both worlds. You have quarterbacks who play a similar enough style but are also different enough, and then you have, you know, the kind of team that's trying to stay atop the mountain and a team ascending. I mean, it feels to me like that's as good of a budding NFL rivalry as there is.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I even published on CBSSports.com Friday morning that I wish we could have a third matchup between these teams. I think we're all rooting for maybe a rematch in the playoffs, because the past two matchups have been absolutely incredible. But you're right, both these quarterbacks are stars. Both are somewhat MVP candidates. And, you know, there's a lot of storylines coming from this matchup. It wasn't the high-scoring affair like we saw the first time around, but it's interesting to see the Seattle Seahawks, who have one of the worst defenses in the NFL, to step up, and their newly acquired defensive end Carlos Dunlap to come through with a game-winning sack on Kyler Murray less than a week after we had the quote-unquote Hail Murray. So that was an absolutely huge revenge win for the Seattle Seahawks. And real quick, you brought up NBA free agency. I thought I was coming on today to defend the city of Nashville, where I'm stationed. I wanted the Raptors to come here instead of going to Tampa. I thought that was the real reason you guys had me on today.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I've never actually been to Nashville. I was actually in Nashville when I was a kid. Like, we just drove through and I was on a road trip, so I didn't really get to experience Nashville. But by all accounts, it's pretty fun. So maybe they could have gone there. Maybe they would have had a lot of trouble staying out of trouble, maybe. But, yeah. I would want to play in somewhere warm if I'm not playing in Toronto. So I understand why they did that. I wanted to stick with that Thursday nighter with you. And this is a very complicated question, Jordan. Are we sure that Cliff Kingsbury is a good coach in the NFL? Because I'm not convinced. This guy does a lot of questionable things most games I watch the Cardinals play.
Yeah, you know, he's a polarizing figure, which is totally fair. So you either love him or you hate him at this point in time, which is somewhat unfair, right? I mean, he's in his second year as an NFL head coach. It's not like he had incredible success at the college level, especially when it came to the defensive side of the ball and recruiting. But the guy knows what he's doing on the offensive side of the ball. He's got his quarterback in Kyler Murray. And again, this is a second-year player who seems like he's emerging into a rising star. And we've seen head coaches kind of hitch themselves to their quarterbacks and find unprecedented levels of success. So I think it's too early. I do like what he has done so far. I mean, either not, the Cardinals are in the playoff race, and just a couple of years ago, they were literally the worst team in the NFL, and that's something that's worth stating. So I think it is too early to say, but I have to say that I like what he has done so far.
Yeah, it's funny when you are a guy who's obviously, we know exactly what he is. He's an offensive guru. We saw what he did at the college level on that side of the ball, and then you pair him up with a guy like that. It's just, you know, a lot of people, I wonder how many there are the kind of almost Josh McDaniels-esque comparables of, you know, it'd be interesting to see what this guy was. And not that him being the head coach is hampering his ability to call a game or work with the offense. I'm not saying it is, but it would be interesting to just kind of see how we'd perceive him. You know, let's say he didn't get the Cardinals head coaching job, but he was somebody's hot shot. You know, Brian Daboll's getting tons of love up here in Buffalo, and you know, it'd be interesting to see how he was viewed if he was just kind of able to be that offensive guru.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. I mean, how many times have we heard the word like offensive genius when it comes to like Adam Gase or like Josh McDaniels, and they get a head coaching gig and they kind of flame out, right? So he got that chance to be the head coach, to lead a franchise. I think he has a good coaching staff around him as well. So that in some way sets him up for success. But yeah, it would be fun to kind of sit around and just hypothesize how this guy would be viewed just as a coaching prospect if he was in the seat of an offensive coordinator instead of a head coach.
That's right. And that's what sports radio is built on, is hypotheticals and talking yourself into things that maybe could have, would have been. Let's talk about another kind of a hotshot offensive coach who is a head coach. You know, the team that they've been a team that's kind of confounded me for the past couple of years. It's the Packers. You know, another year, another great record, another good, strong year. But I don't know that they necessarily terrify anyone. I don't know how much of that is just Rodgers kind of gets more credit than he deserves for keeping that team afloat, or maybe it's the other side of the coin that they're as good as they are just because of Rodgers, and that's why they don't scare anyone, because outside of him, there just isn't a lot there. Where are you at on the Packers?
Yeah, it's a really weird and loaded question, I guess. And, you know, I brought up the word polarizing earlier, and I think that also can be said about the Packers, because a lot of people tab this team as a prime candidate to regress in 2020, and they haven't exactly done that. Now, Aaron Rodgers obviously is the heart and soul of this team, but where the X factor truly lies in my mind is on the defensive side of the ball. I thought they were going to be a great team in this season because of the defensive side of the ball. We saw the Smith brothers, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, have absolutely breakout seasons last year, and they haven't exactly been the same players. We thought they had some young and upcoming stars in the secondary, and they haven't exactly come to form just yet. I thought the Packers were a team that was building on the defensive side of the ball, that they were going to match the kind of output that the offense was having on their side of the ball. And we haven't exactly seen that. They haven't exactly been the perfect team, right? They barely covered against they didn't even cover the spread against the Jacksonville Jaguars last week. So they have a great game against the Indianapolis Colts this week. I think it's going to be telling. They're underdogs, which has me leaning towards taking the Packers. Obviously, a lot of people are going to be watching this game, because either way you spin it, the Green Bay Packers are a contender in the NFC. It's just how confident you're going to be in this team.
For sure. Oh.
Yeah, just you talk about the defense there. Boy, if only they had a, I don't know, a high-value draft pick they could have used to add to that side of the ball as opposed to someone sit behind him. I don't know. That's just me, though. I don't know. That's just me.
Well, but we all know, boys, that Aaron Rodgers wouldn't be able to play so well if he didn't have, you know, this fire lit under him, because he just needs that pettiness to sustain him, right? That's the only way he's playing so well.
That's a great point. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know how much truth there is to it, but at the same time, if I was a Green Bay fan living in Wisconsin, that would definitely be the narrative I believe, just so I can sleep at night.
Yeah, you got to go with that. So I want to move back over to the AFC, and I want to ask you about the Baltimore Ravens, because I'm willing to throw it last week, you know, because there are a lot of people were kind of coming up with these narratives out of that game against the Patriots, how they lost on Sunday night. But have you seen worse weather than that in a football game, Jordan? Like, that was legitimately a monsoon, and I'm not ready to make any sort of sweeping generalizations out of that game. But even heading into that, I've been a little bit I wouldn't say concerned, but maybe I'll say concerned about what I've seen from the Baltimore Ravens this year and what I've seen from last year's MVP in Lamar Jackson. How concerned are you of them as a potential contender in the AFC? It really seems like they've kind of not fallen off a cliff, but taken a big step back this year.
Well, first off, talking about the weather, I had no idea that the football gods still held the Patriots in favor. I mean, monsoon that Lamar Jackson had to face on his potential game-winning drive was something that no athlete in the world, in history of life, could have ever overcome, right? And as soon as the final whistle blew, reporters were tweeting out that the rains had completely stopped and it was like a perfect night. And it was unbelievable.
That was all Bill.
You know, when you talk, it was all Bill, right? I mean, he's cheating somehow, right?
No, 100%.
But when it comes to the Ravens just as a team, it's objective, right? Everyone knows that they have definitely taken a step backwards. Now, this was my candidate to win the Super Bowl this year, actually, and obviously I'm not feeling as confident. But at the same time, they're still in a decent position. I don't know if anyone's going to catch the Steelers in that division, obviously, because they are undefeated. But at the same time, this team has the potential. I mean, maybe they just need to get everything together when it comes to the defensive side of the ball is definitely where my eye was on that Patriots matchup because they couldn't stop the run. So obviously they face Derrick Henry tomorrow, which is going to be interesting to see if they can step up a guy who ran for 195 yards and ended Earl Thomas's career in January. The offense obviously has a lot of potential. We really want to see Lamar Jackson become a better downfield thrower. I don't know if he can do that in the coming weeks. You probably need an offseason to do that. But that's how you defeat the Baltimore Ravens, is trying to make Lamar Jackson beat you downfield. But again, at the same time, they have a good head coach. They have a lot of good pieces on both sides of the ball, so you can never rule them out. But at the same time, I don't think that they're the favorite in the court of public opinion to go back to go to the Super Bowl and win it.
Yeah, that's well said. And you know, you mentioned the Steelers in the division. I'm not sure they're really great either. But they're 9-0. It's a stupid thing to say, but they've just, you know, the Big Ben play worries me from time to time. But he looks so great. But then he takes hits, and it's like as soon as he goes out, it starts to look a little thinner. And I'm not completely convinced. You know, it's just a weird division with them being 9-0. It's just so shocking when you watch them play every week.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's a stupid thing to say. I think a lot of people have been saying the same thing, and I've had this discussion a lot this week. I feel like we're all looking for the perfect team that we can claim are going to be the Super Bowl favorites and everything like that, and we just don't have it yet. But the Steelers are undefeated, and like the Ravens, they have great pieces on both sides of the ball, and their defense has a lot less questions than the Ravens. This team is definitely one of the Super Bowl favorites, along with people like the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think Ben Roethlisberger has been inconsistent up to a point, but at the same time, it's hard to lose when you have weapons like Juju Smith-Schuster, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, James Conner, and a stable of running backs they have there. So you're right. The Pittsburgh Steelers have not been perfect this year, but they have remained in the win column, and hey, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and honestly, like, that Chase Claypool, I know it's such a huge NFL sort of narrative that everyone always talks about, but the Steelers and their drafting of receivers is just absurd at this point, Jordan. Like, it really is. Like, this guy Claypool, who is Canadian, we all love him up here. We're huge fans of him, but, like, their ability to draft wide receivers is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember going on your station a few months ago before the NFL draft, and I was getting asked about Chase Claypool. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's that Notre Dame kid who was kind of like a freak athlete. Like, I knew exactly who you guys were talking about. And I was like, yeah, this guy has a lot of potential as a pro. He just has to go to the right team. And then when the Pittsburgh Steelers drafted him, I went back to that conversation and I said, oh, damn. Because the Steelers are so good at developing those draft picks wherever they pick them, and these wide receivers all over the draft. So as soon as that happened, I had to pick them up in all of my dynasty fantasy football leagues. And sure enough, that's been a great decision. He's been an absolute freak. He's going to be a star in this league. And a big reason because of that is that he went to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, and Jordan, you just struck a nerve with me there because I'm in our fan, we have a league, and everyone cares about everyone's fantasy team, so I'm going to talk about this quickly. I know everyone will be really thrilled to hear this. But he didn't get drafted in our keeper league, and I ended up picking him up off waivers for a pretty cheap, And then everyone in our league voted to reset the keepers. So I don't get to keep Canada's own Chase Claypool in my keeper league. I'm crushed. So I just had to get that out there.
Wait, what's going on? So your league penalizes you for having football smarts? Is that what I just heard?
I guess. Everyone's like, oh, I'm bored with their keepers. We got to reset the keepers. So they reset the keepers after the draft. I was hot about it. I had some great looking guys to keep this year. I have DK, I have Russ. You know, I just want to keep all these guys, but now I got to let them all go into free agency. It breaks my heart, Jordan.
That is absurd. Yeah, you definitely need to file a petition with your commissioner. There's no doubt about it.
Thank you.
I think we're going to file it in the very next block on the show here. This is an injustice that needs to be saved. And Jordan, not an injustice to have you on the show today. Thoroughly enjoyed the chat with
great
you.
Great job,
so
buddy.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thank you.
Here he goes. Jordan DeJaney, NFL writer for CBSSports.com. Pitchman for the city of Nashville as well, wanting the Raptors to play there. I didn't know we were going to get that from him. But hey, you of all people cannot knock somebody getting on the soapbox for their hometown. I know you can't knock that.
Hey, Raptors should play in Own Sound. Perfect. There's hardly any cases out there. It's great. Go out there. That's where the best place to be. Play in Own Sound. Great for travel. You know, you only have to take a 2.5-hour bus from the Toronto airport. No problem. Just do it.
Set up a practice court on the 17th green at Cobble Beach. Lighthouse in the background. George and Bay glistening. Wouldn't it be nice? I loved that chat with him there. Clay. I have to be honest, though. I'm just hearing about this. Now, I'm of two minds hearing about your fantasy team. I don't know what I like less, your 30 seconds of Chelsea Blues you ram down my throat every Monday or your fantasy talk. But I do have to say, that seems unjust, the keeper discussion.
For sure.
I feel like, you know, a little plug here, fantasy show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, gets you ready for NFL on Sunday. I know some of the guys I believe shows in that league at the very least.
He
feel like you have to take this and litigate it on air. We have to get Andy McNamara a gavel. We have to get him one of those like old school barrister wigs. I know it's radio, but I just want to see him in it. And
yeah,
I want him ruling on this on a Sunday morning. I honestly feel like we just stumbled on a little content there.
I might have to call into that show and get their take on it because, you know, I feel as though if you're going into a fantasy league and your understanding is when the draft starts and when the first few weeks are going, that you're not, that it's still going to be a keeper league, you draft with that way in mind. But if you were saying, hey, after this season, we're resetting all the keepers, it's going to be, you would draft differently. You would attack the waiver wire differently. So the fact that this got decided halfway through the season after every, like, I had so many guys that I was so excited to keep, and this is just, I'm mad about it. Like, I have had, you know, I don't know, I've had the stuff pulled out from under me, you know. It's just, it's really upsetting. Alex Sixero is the commissioner, but here's what I'll say. It was democracy. We can't, you know, we went in there, we have a WhatsApp group.
Stop the count.
We have a WhatsApp group that we talk about this stuff, and it was voted in favor of resetting the keepers. So what can I do? Democracy works, and, you know, I'm glad that we have a democratic league, but guess them's the breaks, Gunner.
No, I'm out. Not them's the breaks. I was a stud in my grade 11 law class in our mock trials. I'm ready to suit up and fight this fight with you, McKee. I feel like you're pretty apathetic about it, to be perfectly honest. I feel like you just want to kind of whine but don't want to fix it. But if you
100%.
Want an advocate, if you want an advocate by your side, I'm here. I'm here for you, buddy. I would love
Thank
nothing
you.
More after I watch some F1 tomorrow morning to hop on the fantasy show and defend your honor.
Yeah, F1, they're racing again tomorrow?
I think. I don't know. It's Sunday. I feel like they usually do. I can't.
Week off.
Week off. Boo. Yeah.
So, Allie and I, last weekend, just to get the F1 talk there, Allie and I, we PVR'd the race, and I knew who won, but Allie is so committed to F1. She stayed off Instagram.
I saw her shouting it out on Instagram.
She stayed off Instagram. She didn't look at the news all day. You know what time we watched the race? At like 8 p.m. Like, I was watching the Sunday Nighter on my computer, and she was watching, and she was like locked in. And of course, Lewis Hamilton, I'm like, I could have just, like, you don't really need to watch. Like, Lewis Hamilton is just going to win. But it was a little bit of a disappointing performance from Canada's boy Lance Stroll there. But it was a good race. A little wet to start. I hate the wet ones. They can't get going like they usually do. But, yeah, it was a very enjoyable race. And Lewis Hamilton is the absolute man.
I know we're cutting Eric Thomas's grass here, so I would never want to do that to him. But I got to say, and I know this is wrong because, hey, people who don't watch golf give me takes about, you know what would make golf interesting? And it's always a bad idea. Always. Why don't they just let Lewis Hamilton start last every time and just see how many people he can gun down? I was watching a race, I don't know, maybe a month, 2 months ago, and he got this massive penalty. He ended up in, like, at one point he was way at the back of the pack, and it was the most enthralling thing I have ever seen in my life, watching him just hunt down these guys, and they're like, oh, if he has another two laps, he'll get up to third. It was electric. Apparently, Andrew Dutch Holland is telling me this is a thing. It has been talked about.
Oh, the reverse grid? Crazy.
It's called a reverse grid.
Yeah, I read a thing about that they were considering that, and I would love that too, and that would add to a lot. But I mean, they've already got the cap spending, so they're sort of starting to go in the direction of, you know, trying to level the playing field a little bit. And I guess you kind of saw that with, you know, two Racing Point guys on the pole last week, but it was a rainy, weird sort of qualifying. But yeah. I'm an expert now, as you can hear me talking. I'm just an absolute expert. But my boy Albon had a tough race. I'm a Red Bull guy. I love both the Red Bull guys big time, Verstappen and Albon. So it was a tough race for my boys, but I absolutely love watching it. And if you can't get into it, just watch the Netflix thing and you'll instantly be into it. So I feel like I've talked about F1 on every show that I've had in the past little bit, but it's a huge deal. No one, it's not like people here don't care about it that much, but like Lewis Hamilton is what, top 10 famous dude on earth?
Got to be, at least as far as athletics goes. And I like what we've found is there's a little friction here because I'm out on Max Verstappen. We're not going to litigate it now, but I'm
Verstappen's
out on that guy.
The man.
I'm a Daniel Ricciardo guy. It's mostly just because of the way the narrator. No, here's what it is. The way the narrator on the F1 show says his voice, Daniel Ricciardo is making a turn. It puts me to sleep. It's almost like, here, this for my soccer people. Oh, I forgot. You're one of those. It's like back in the day, I used to play a little FIFA. I know this will shock you. And the way the British announcer would say, Andres Iniesta, I just loved him. I know it's not how he would say it, but it makes me like him. You get a British guy to say your name in a cool way, I'm in. There we go.
That's all it takes for me
to be sold. You know what else I'm going to sell you on? The Bills.
What?
They're on a bye week. Next week, they'll be back trying to recover from the Hail Mary. What's going on with the Bills? We'll get into that with Dan Fates when we continue on Sportsnet Today.
Sportsnet 590.
Today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee, more than halfway through the program. Boy, it has flowed along this morning. Lots to talk about. Obviously, NBA free agency at front of mind, but lots going on for the Bills. Not actually this week. We know they're on the bye, but our next guest, Dan Fates, a sports anchor and reporter with 13 Wham in Buffalo, joining us to discuss the Bills now. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Always happy. Now, I have to be honest. I'm just looking at your Twitter bio right now, and you have four lines on it. The third one, it's right after my own heart. It says, struggle with grammar, but make up for it in sarcasm. And I feel like we're just kind of separated at birth. I feel like this is going to go great because, as my co-host can attest, you basically need a Brent Gunning translator to understand what I'm trying to say in text when I'm misspelling things and not including punctuation. So I'm just happy to have a guy like myself on the show today.
There we go.
I appreciate it, and I'm glad you can understand where I'm coming from. So it means a lot to me.
There we go. What I think means a lot to the Bills, this bye week could not have come at a better time for them. Obviously, a tough, tough, tough loss last time we saw them. It just feels like this is kind of the perfect time for a team to regroup. I don't even want to say get back on track, but just kind of take a deep breath after a loss like that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I actually feel better about the Bills after this loss they had in heartbreaking fashion against Arizona than I did against their win over New England, which was a huge emotional win. But I think it's so easy to get distorted from one play taking away from a game. Look, the Bills have issues that hopefully they can fix, especially the main one is figuring out how to stop the run and figuring out how to run the ball. But you look at what they did. They went up against a really good defense in Seattle and beat them. I was afraid about an emotional letdown going up, now going to Arizona last week and playing a, you know, again, one of the top-ranked offenses in the league. And the defense held up. They held Kyler Murray to just 3 field goals in the first half. They gave up 17 unanswered points in the third quarter, which is the biggest mystery that nobody can solve in Western New York now, is what the heck goes on in the third quarter. But, look, they had penalties. They stalled at times. But guess what? Josh Allen led another game-winning drive. It should have been his 12th career game-winning drive. He threw a beautiful ball to Stephon Diggs that should have won the game, but that gets forgotten off one crazy fluke play where, as DeAndre Hopkins said it, there were three guys around me, but it was a better catch by I. So you just can't be too distorted by what the last play of the game was, is that the Bills should have held another really good defense to 26 points and should have won a game. It is what it is. They're 7-3 at the bye week, which, again, I think you said it best, couldn't come at a better time.
Yeah, and look, that play, and you can dissect all the guys that were there and what everybody did, you know, and if one hand was knocked out of the way or whatever. But that's just one guy who was obscenely good at his job doing it better than four other guys. You know, it was just a once in a season Hail Mary that happens, and it just happened to happen to the Bills. But yeah, that's well said, because they did play great in that game. They really did. And Josh Allen, man, he just continues to grow. And you said the guy that you were talking about, Stephon Diggs, there, and that's the guy I wanted to ask you about, because this guy is second in the league in receiving yards. He's got 4 touchdowns, 73 receptions, been unbelievable for the Bills this year. And it's a credit to Brandon Bean there to be able to make that trade to identify him, because he really has opened up the offense completely for this team.
Yeah, it's really funny. You know, every time we see Stephon Diggs play, I get impressed even more and more. And especially his play last week, you know, I was kind of like, you realize how much Brandon Bean stole Diggs from Minnesota. I mean, just only one first-round pick. He should have had to give up 2 and some players, and he didn't. He got him for a first-round pick, and he has turned Josh Allen around. Look, Josh Allen last year was really bad against man coverage. Part of that was because he didn't have maybe the best wide receivers, but now they have one of the top wide receiving corps in the room, and it's led by Stephon Diggs, who's an absolute leader. I knew the Bills were going to get a true number one wide receiver when they got Stephon Diggs. It's incredible what leadership he has brought to Buffalo with his edge, with his route running, with his, you know, kind of tenacity. You know, you saw him after the Kansas City game. He was along the sidelines, you know, high-fiving all of his teammates, kind of letting them know that they'll be, you know, it's fine. It's one game. They'll be back. He has taken Josh Allen from one of the worst quarterbacks in the league against man coverage to one of the best. Now, obviously some of that's on Josh, but you can't discredit how much Stephon Diggs has been winning one-on-one matchups. Teams that have played man coverage against the Bills have gotten lit up. Now, they've struggled with these two deep zones and, you know, kind of like what the Jets did to them, you know, kind of like what Kansas City and Tennessee's done. But Seattle tried to play man coverage against them, and Josh lit them up, and Josh found more success again last week with Diggs having another 10 catches, which is just impressive.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, like there's all the talk about what you can do with a number one wide receiver, right? And like, it's like, oh, can you win if you're paying the wide receiver the big money? But the two guys that got traded are the two top receiving yards guys in the NFL this year, with Hopkins and Stephon Diggs, the two guys that move. So turns out it's pretty important there, Dan.
Yeah, and like I said, and the Bills have reinvented themselves. For the longest time, this team has been, you know, built their calling card, their identity has been defense. For the last, I don't know, 2 decades, they are now in a 21st century offense. We joke around about it, you know, back here that, you know, this is the Josh Allen experience. They are going to go as far as Josh Allen will take them. And they have built this team around Josh Allen. I know they have struggled to run the ball. Last year, they were 8th in the NFL at rushing the ball, about 128 yards a game. This year, they're 30th in the league at 98 yards a game. And people want to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. They've got to get back to running the ball. I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. This team plays best when they let Josh cook, when they let him drop back and throw the ball 35 times. Brandon Bean didn't go out and sign Stephon Diggs to run block. He got him to get out there to make cornerbacks look silly and to put the ball in Josh's hands. We've seen multiple games where Josh has come out and thrown 13 plays in a row. Brian Daboll has just given him the keys and said, here you go. Against Seattle, they threw the ball 28 times in the first half to 3 runs. Like, this is what they're going to do. And that's when they play their best, not when they're trying to run the ball with, you know, Devin Singletary and this offensive line has just struggled to run block. They've been pretty good in pass protection. And when Josh has found, you know, he has matured so much this year into being disciplined. And, yeah, he's still going to have some of these throws where he just thinks his arm can throw it through a defender, and that doesn't always work. But he has shown so much growth and trust and understanding in this system. And I know I've said it before in some other interviews. When we talked to Josh before the season, the big thing he said was that he felt so comfortable and confident in this system. And he said that he felt he had more answers to questions that were going to be brought to him in the middle of a game. And so far this year, turnovers down, touchdowns way up. He has all the answers.
Talking to Dan Fates here on Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee, and Dan, I like what you said about the run game, and I do want to pick up on that, but I just want to go back to Diggs for a second. You know, obviously, we know how he left in Minnesota. There were some thoughts of, oh, is he a malcontent? Yep. Is he one of these kind of prima donna wide receivers? And I think for me, what it reeks of is, you know, you just look at that situation in Minnesota, and he just had this kind of mushy spot in the pecking order. They love to run it with Cook. Thielen was incredible. It just felt like now that he's here in Buffalo, and there is no doubt about what he is, and he has almost no choice but to take on that responsibility of being that leader that you talked about. I feel like it's no accident that now that he is kind of properly atop the pecking order, he's really establishing himself as that guy.
Yeah, I think he wanted to be. I think that's a great point. I think he wanted to be a focal point. I think he wanted to be the number one guy. He has done everything, and I mean everything right, from his Zoom calls to everything that he has done. So, you know, we're hearing that Brian Daboll is coming in at halftime, and Stephon Diggs is coming into the locker room and saying, you got to feed Cole Beasley. John Brown's open. You've got to feed them. And then John Brown's going, you got to feed 14. He's the one that's open. Like that is what they've brought in. And I don't think that that's just noise. I think that that's something that's really going on in this locker room. Josh Allen has said that he has been nothing but a great teammate and a competitor. They have really fed off one another. And it also helps that Josh even kind of laughed about it the last time we asked him about, you know, has Diggs turned a corner? Has he turned a page in his career? And Josh even said, easy to be happy when you lead the league in targets. Like, Josh is feeding Stephon Diggs too. Yeah. And it's a lot easier when you're the number one guy to be getting number one targets. So that helps. Winning has helped. It really kind of has been a perfect, you know, second marriage for Stephon Diggs and the Bills here in Buffalo.
Very great analogy. I love a little knife and life analogy. Good job for you giving us that there. Now, Brian Daboll's got a ton of credit, and you were kind of mentioning this about the run game earlier. There's no shame, and if you've got a dominant passing offense, leaning on it, but it does feel like a guy who's gotten, you know, for how much credit Daboll's gotten for getting that offense or the passing offense going, does he deserve any blame for the fact that the run game's been pretty much absent aside from that 1 week, or is this simply just the personnel's not there?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. The O-line was supposed to be this rock-solid five guys returning continuity things. And, you know, 5 weeks into the season, Quinn Spain all of a sudden gets released. And he was a big part. I remember talking to a lot of guys last year. I thought re-signing Quinn Spain this offseason was the most important thing the Bills had to do because of how well Quinn Spain played last year. And all of a sudden, he's gone. Mitch Morse is out with a concussion. John Feliciano's had the pec injury. They've kind of been shuffling pieces in and out. Brian Winters has been in and out. Cody Ford. Like, I'm naming a bunch of guys that I didn't really expect to have an impact this year. And all of a sudden, all these pieces have come in. And it's easy to say that, you know, Brian Daboll's got to do, you know, get more creative with the running game. And we've asked him about it. And it's not for lack of effort. He says he's trying zone running schemes and power running schemes and trap running schemes and reverse. Like, he's like, we're trying everything. And that's where I think it comes back to this bye. Having such a late bye is weird. You know, you see a lot of teams that come out. Look at the Miami Dolphins last year. Against the spread since their bye last year. I know it's just against the spread. They're the best team in the NFL. They're 16-5 against the number since last season's bye. And you can't minimize the importance of a bye for a good coaching staff. And I think that's what the Bills have. So to give Brian Daboll this offensive line and this running, you know, these running backs a week to just kind of say, okay, let's get everybody healthy. Mitch Morse was back from his concussion last week, but didn't play at center. So he was healthy. He was dressed. He just didn't play, which kind of gave us all head scratchers. Like, what does that mean? I think maybe they just wanted to ease him into the bye. You know, obviously you can be cleared from concussion protocol, but you may not be, you know, fully ready in the coach's eyes. It was his fifth concussion. So maybe they just kind of gave him a breath. But I expect Cody Ford to be back, Mitch Morse to be back next week, and to try and get back to the most similar offensive line that they had last year, where they did have success running the ball. Zach Moss has been a little bit, you know, has been more of a bright spot than Devin Singletary. But this team, it just doesn't seem like that's their identity. And I know you have to run the ball in the playoffs and in tough weather. But I'm okay with them only throwing the ball 11 times a game or running the ball 11 times a game and letting Josh do his thing. I know I get backlash from that. I just don't know how much you need to have an effective running game, but I don't think you need to be able to run the ball for 150 yards a game.
Dan, if you're getting backlash on a take, all that means it's strong, and I love the sounds of that. Thoroughly enjoyed the chat with you this morning. Go enjoy that sarcasm, and don't enjoy any grammar today.
Love it.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Dan.
There he goes. Dan Fates from 13 Wham in Buffalo. As you say, McKee, man, they're locked in on the Bills in Buffalo. It's a bye week there. So knowledgeable. And it's an interesting take. Most of the Bills guys we've talked about this year have been pretty adamant. Got to get the run going. Got to get the run going. Run game has to be there. And, you know, me and you both love a zag. So Dan coming out and saying run game, schmung game, I'll take it. I love a good zag.
Yeah, and I just wanted to quickly get into it with you because I know what your thoughts are on Josh Allen, and he was talking about sort of how, like, the let Josh cook kind of thing and sort of taking his lumps. And, you know, there's not – this is a pretty sort of basic way to look at it, but there's not a lot of people on earth that are good quarterbacks. There's what, 10 of them? You know?
Something like that, yeah.
There's 20 guys in the NFL that are, like, they're NFL quarterbacks. They're obscenely good at it. But you're not in that top echelon, and there's 10 guys in the world who are really, really good at being a quarterback in the NFL. And guess what? Bills Mafia, you have one of them. You can hang your hat on that. You have a guy that, you know, he may not be perfect, and we all know that Josh Allen intensifying here. Like, sometimes he gets a little wild out there. I think back to the playoff game last year against Houston, when he threw the ball to no one for no reason when he was being tackled in the open field. He has his moments, but I think you can just sort of hang your hat on the fact that you have a quarterback when you put the right pieces around him and you have a good defense and you surround him with the right people, that you have the potential to make a run in the playoffs and potentially get to a Super Bowl. I think you can finally hang your hat on that when you're Bills Mafia.
I'm going to go cross-sport analogy on you for Josh Allen.
Let me have it. I love those.
Josh Allen, now granted, this player I'm about to compare him to was late in their career. Josh Allen early in his. He is, excuse me.
Oh, speck of dust.
Speck
get
of
it
dust.
Out of there, Gunner.
Speck of dust. Had to get it out. I was nice enough to mute myself to clear it.
Attaboy.
Josh Allen is late career Dirk Nowitzki. You can win a title with him. The pieces just have to be really right around him. I absolutely believe he is good enough, and there is no knock on saying, is he good enough to win with? Yes, he absolutely is. Now, I don't think anyone's saying he's this. He's not Rodgers. He's not Mahomes. He's not one of these guys who you can just turn the car keys over to, and no matter what's happening, he can make it happen. I think that he has proved now, and hey, I will own up to it. I've been the guy saying, not so sold. I have been getting progressively more sold. I still think that he is in that imperfect good quarterback where, you know, you need the right mix around him. You need the right team. And granted, he has taken strides this year separate from adding Stephon Diggs. There is no doubt about it. He is a better, more comfortable quarterback this year. But it's also not an accident that you give him an elite, elite weapon and he starts looking a lot better. So I think that's where I'm at 100%. On him. He is exactly like a fringy number one option in the NBA. You can absolutely win a title with that guy. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We've seen worse quarterbacks do it, but pieces around him still have to be right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think he's going to be the guy that, you know, turns these bums or whoever they are, like Tom Brady did for a long time, turning guys that were nothing into, you know, not stars, but capable receivers. And there's certain guys that, like, you know, kind of make everyone around them better. And I think Josh Allen can be that. But I think what you pointed out there about how he needs to have the weapons around him to kind of elevate him is a good one. But, yeah, I mean, I love the receiver core. I mean, I really love Cole Beasley. I love a guy like that that's just running over the middle, just a gritty receiver that's always going to make all these catches underneath. He had a couple huge catches. That one hand grab was probably the best grab he's made in his life in that final drive against the Cardinals last week. But I like what he's brought. I love John Brown when he's healthy, and Stephon Diggs just opens it all up for them. But yeah, I think, like, Josh Allen's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, right?
Yep, I agree. He might be 10, but he's definitely top 10. There's no, there. You know, I'm not going to sit here and rank them all.
So then, like, if you're a Bills fan, like, guess what? there's not a lot of Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers out there. Like, there's only one of those guys. There's a reason those guys never change teams. Like, there's just, you either get really lucky in the draft and you get a generational guy, or you have one of the other kind of, you know, other top 10 guys who aren't on that level, but they're pretty good and they're passable. Like, it's just, it's so hard to find a quarterback in the NFL. So to find even a guy that's as good as Josh Allen is a remarkable thing for a franchise that was in the weeds, in the woods for so many years with so many weird quarterbacks that never really got it done. Like, the I'm sorry, I shouldn't slag on our boy Fitzmagic, but like Fitzmagic and Tyrod and all these guys, right? So they've found something in Josh Allen, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think they have, and you know, Dan mentioned the problem there, the slow third quarters for them. You know, you have to wonder. I don't know who else to put that on but coaching, and you know, so, you got to give a lot of credit to Daboll, but I wonder, despite how good the record's been, if there's some fair questions to ask about Sean McDermott as well.
And quickly before we go here, Gunnar, you know, I'm looking at the standings in the NFL, and I'm looking at the Dolphins of Miami, speak mm-hmm. words, the Miami Dolphins, and they have gone 3-0 now. I think they've won 5 games in a row, and they've gone 3-0 with Tua. If you are a Buffalo Bills fan in Western New York, how concerned are you about the Miami Dolphins only being 1 game behind you heading into your bye? Are you feeling that they're a real threat to take your mantle as the AFC East champion? Or do you think that once you get your back up from the bye and you're going to get rolling here, you're not worried about it?
I think you have to be concerned, because I kind of had that Week 17 matchup circled. I genuinely think it's probably going to come down to that. I think the Bills are definitely a better team than the Dolphins. I think all things considered, they probably eke out one more win along the way, and it's a little more comfortable than that. But yeah, it's the old objects in the rearview mirror are closer than they appear, and I think that is a little bit what's happening to the Dolphins. And I think that's the nicest thing I've ever said about them on a show that Dan Marino's producing. So good job for him as well.
Hey, I gotta say, our boy Marino, I'm excited to talk to him in Marino's little huddle later on. But the Finns are like one of my favorite teams to watch. Like, I love watching Arizona. I love watching Seattle because of my fantasy implications, and also I love watching Russell Wilson work, and DK. DK is the baddest dude in the league, honestly. Like, is there a cooler-looking guy in the league than DK Metcalf?
Pause. We will discuss that next on Sportsnet Today.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Josh Allen discussion here on Sportsnet Today. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. I don't know that I agree with this nameless texter. And first things first, shame on you for not including your name and location. Hit us up on the text line as always.
I'm seeing the one you're talking about.
590. He's Flacco. That feels a little harsh. And I don't think anybody means he's Joe Flacco today. But that guy won the Super Bowl, and if that's kind of the perfect recipe. Now, that's not what I was saying. Don't put words in my mouth, nameless texter. But I thought that was an interesting comparison, because I think a little higher ceiling on that than even we saw. And, hey, that Flacco run was unbelievable, but it was 4 games long. I don't think he's Joe Flacco, but I don't know that they're wholly wrong with what I was saying, if you catch my drift there, McKee.
Yeah, the one comparison that I've seen a bunch is the one is Big Ben, which I think is an interesting one. And I do think that one is a little better than Flacco. I don't necessarily know if you'll have the career of Big Ben, but he really is a sort of, you know, throw inhibition to the wind, slinging the ball around, huge guy that's not afraid to take hits. And like, if you remember earlier in Big Ben's career, he was definitely much more willing to, you know, go out of the pocket and kind of break off these 7 and 8 yard runs and take big hits. Not so much anymore. I mean, as a Steelers fan, every Steelers game I watch with Big Ben, I fear the next hit is the last one, because, you know, he's getting that age, that Drew Brees age, where, you know, what happened to Drew Brees last week. And yeah, I worry about that with Big Ben, but I think that Josh Allen now has kind of become that, where he's a sort of bruising QB who's kind of a gunslinger, got a great deep ball. I think I see the Big Ben comparisons with him much more than I see the Flacco comparison. But like, Flacco had a stretch there. Like, I think he was, even before they won the Super Bowl, like, he played in a lot of big games. Like, he was a good quarterback on a good team for a long time. And I think we sort of, you know, identify him as what he is now, but he was a good player for a long time, Gunner.
Yeah, and I mean, the big arm comparison is obviously probably where that starts with.
Yeah.
I think this is the least sexy sports radio answer of all time. The truth, probably somewhere in the middle. I think the good news for Bills fans is he's way closer to Big Ben than he is to what we think of as Joe Flacco. But boy, they would sign up for a Big Ben-esque run right now. They'd take one Super Bowl, let alone the three that he's won there. So you quickly just talked about DK Metcalf. Sometimes somebody's just destined to be exactly what they end up being. You know, maybe you're a kid who is just always painting and you end up being Picasso. You know, I don't know if you saw, there's been these baby pictures going around of DK Metcalf, and he was cut as a baby. Like he had biceps as a baby. And you just see him on the sidelines. He's prowling around. He's got I think it's green hair now. We've seen red at certain times this year. He's got the one dangly ear. He's got the cool face paint. He looks like he should be a menace in the NFL, and that's exactly what he is. And I don't know that there's anybody anywhere near as cool as him.
No, he's my favorite receiver in the league. I absolutely love DK Metcalf. And the thing is, he should have had a way bigger game. But, you know, there was that weird holding penalty against the center on the Seahawks. That poor kid had a tough night. He was getting false starts, holds, everything. But, I mean, they were asking him to play out of position, and he was a rookie. And he had that ball that inexplicably hit him right in the face when he was in the end zone. Like, it was a perfect ball. He catches that usually, and it just hit him right in the mask. So he could have even had a bigger night. But, yeah, DK Metcalf's the man, and he's quickly vaulted himself into, you know, the conversation for one of the best receivers in the league. And, you know, those two together, they seem to have a real – I love the receivers on the Seahawks. Like, Lockett's amazing. I love DK. You know, I even love that I love their big bag of milk tight ends, you know, Hollister, and they got that the other guy there too. I can't think of his name right now, but I love the Seahawks' offensive game. The run game got better with Carlos Hyde, but their defense, still not great. But, yeah, Seahawks, I love their offensive game.
Well, and I mean, Lockett and Metcalf, I'm not going to compare what they got going on there to what the Bills have here, but it's just another example of when guys can kind of perfectly slot in. Like Lockett, Lockett is a number one, but he's definitely more of the shiftier, more of the small, more of the slot
underneath
type guy.
Kind of guy.
So
yeah.
Now that you have the two there, and you know, we had our boy J.D. Bunkus on, I think it was a week or two ago, and he was asking us, who's better? Honestly, who's a better receiver in the league than that guy? And I think that the answer is that there's nobody more talented. It's just there are guys who are way more polished. Maybe it's Diggs, maybe it's Hopkins, and it's like Metcalf's got to cut back on the drops. We know he was kind of raw coming into it. I think we've all seen that if he is able to continue to grow, it's only his second year, he's going to be the best receiver in the league. I don't think anybody kind of has a question about that. He's almost that guy now. He just kind of is lacking the polish a little bit.
No, that's well said. And, you know, I think I watch Hopkins play, and I feel like he's definitely not like – he's more of a sneaky elite guy as opposed to like – I don't think he's necessarily as flashy other than when he's catching 50-yard Hail Marys in the end zone with four guys around him. I don't think he's necessarily as flashy as a DK, but, man, he whines a lot. Every play he's trying to get a flag. I feel like not all the receivers are like that, but he's really bad for it. Always doing the thing where they throw the hand up like they're doing the flag thing. I feel like that should be an automatic 10-yard penalty every time a receiver does that. That'll get rid of it pretty quick.
Old man takes with Sam McKee.
You like that one? That's a pretty old man take.
That's super old man. Wow. I don't agree at all, but I love when you plant your flag and say that. What do you got?
We got another good text quickly before we go here.
Sure, give it to me.
Another QB comparison with Josh Allen. Allen is less like Big Ben, more like Dante Culpepper, big and mobile, Brian and Whitby. Like that one. That's a good comparison, too.
I love that. Bills Mafia would love to get their roll on just like he did with Randy Moss back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Just hearing about that combo gives me a sweet, sweet spot because, man, you want to talk about cool receivers in the NFL? Randy Moss with the
pretty
afro,
cool.
Mooning people in Lambeau. Oh, yeah.
That's a disgusting act.
Yeah, Joe Buck. He admitted, not so much. What else we admit? The NBA. We got to dive back into that. So much going on. Serge, Fred VanVleet still looking for homes. I think they'll be able to find them, and I think they'll get paid mightily to do so. We'll see what's going on with that. Going to talk to Michael Caskey, Blow Man, about NBA free agency. Where might those guys land and what he made in the moves yesterday when we continue? 1 hour left on Sportsnet today.
Are merely the vessel that gets you every single piece of sports information possible. This is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Final hour here, Sportsnet today. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee here with you. Obviously, big story going on in the world sports right now. NBA free agency, tons to talk about there. So we will bring in our next guest, Michael Caskey, Blow Maine, joining us now. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
Very, very happy to. Obviously, we love talking, you know, about the league as a whole, but I got to be honest, just self-servingly, it's not often I can do two things at the same time. Let's talk about the Toronto Raptors and the maybe most high-profile free agent that we think might actually move. Fred VanVleet's out there. You know, I think we all know how heavy the interest is for the Raptors. The question I have for you is he more valuable to the Raptors than just about any other team that can actually kind of squeeze him in the cap? Because it feels like, you know, let's say it is the Knicks who go out there and splash big on him. I love Fred VanVleet and what he brings, but it feels like what he brings to a contender is so much more than what he brings as being your first or second best player on a team.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. And I do agree that I think that the best spot moving forward for him is still Toronto, especially in terms of role. Like you said, he could probably go to a team that's not, you know, quite in the playoff picture or ready to contend yet and have a bigger role. Or he could potentially go to another contender and maybe have a little bit of a lesser role. In Toronto, it really seems like he gets the best of both worlds, where he has, you know, a very prominent role on a team that figures to be, you know, right in the thick of the Eastern Conference playoff picture again. So, I mean, assuming that, you know, the Raptors are able to, you know, come close to the number that he's looking at financially, it really seems like staying in Toronto would be the best move for him.
All right, Michael, maybe this is going to be a dumb question, but it's just sort of anecdotal that I've been looking at some of these contracts that have gone out. Are you surprised at how high the money is still with this? You know, everyone was kind of worried about the pandemic and the weird sort of season last year and the less revenue and the lower ratings. Like, are you shocked at some of the money that's being doled out here? Because I have to admit to you, I am pretty shocked.
I think I would say surprised. I think the shock factor is, you know, a few years ago when some of these contracts really started to balloon and get out of the, you know, out of the stratosphere. I think at that point I kind of realized that anything is possible financially in the NBA. But I am surprised at some of the deals for, you know, lesser known players, given the climate that you just mentioned with the revenue loss from last season and a lot of uncertainty moving forward. I did think teams would be a little bit more, you know, tight-fisted with their spending, and some of these guys that are, you know, names that obviously NBA fans know, but that, you know, aren't necessarily household names or commanding, you know, like Christian Wood getting a 3-year, $40 million deal, things like that. It is a little bit surprising, but at the end of the day, I think the NBA is hoping that, you know, they can get their revenue situation in order over the next couple of seasons and get everything kind of back on a straight path.
You mentioned Christian Wood signing with the Rockets there. What do you think, if anything, that says about their plans for the trades that people have been asking them to make, whether it be Harden or Westbrook? It just feels like, does that kind of tip their hand one way or another to you, or do you think that's just a good asset and they wanted to pounce on it while they have the chance?
That's a great question. To me, reading into it, my first reaction was that, you know, a team that's looking to move on from their two best players and potentially rebuild, you know, probably wouldn't look to give out a 3-year contract of that magnitude to a player like Christian Wood. It seemed more like a deal that you make, you know, if you're a team that already has a couple of good pieces in place and you're looking to continue to stay in the, you know, the playoff conversation. So, you know, to me, it didn't necessarily say that they're not going to trade either James Harden or Russell Westbrook, but it did signify to me that they're not, either way, they're not looking to go into a full-fledged rebuild mode. Like, even if they were to trade one of those guys, they're not a situation where they're like the Oklahoma City Thunder right now, where they'll just be looking to get, you know, as many picks back as possible. I think that they're still, you know, even if they do decide to move on from one or both of those guys, they're in a situation where they're still looking to be competitive in the West. At least that's what it said to me.
So, Michael, I was talking about it earlier in the show with John Wall, and I gave my, you know, rather, you know, I would say my hot opinion on it, how I'm not too impressed with John Wall and demanding a trade, you know, after not playing for however many years and not even playing under that contract yet. But I guess the question I have for you is not so much about the actual act of demanding for a trade, but where on earth is he going to get traded to, or how the hell is any team going to justify making a trade for John Wall? It just seems like such a mind-bending thing that could just never happen. What do you make of that, and where do you think he could actually end up if they grant him his wish?
Yeah, I'm with you. I was really surprised when the news that he, you know, wanted out of Washington came out last night, given the fact that, like you said, he hasn't played in, you know, going on almost 2 years now. We haven't seen him on the court or under that new massive contract that he signed. And the Wizards have kind of stood by him through some, you know, some off-court controversy or issues, things like that. You know, they pledged that they, you know, they were looking forward to moving forward with him and continuing to build around him and Bradley Beal. So, you know, I was definitely surprised. And, you know, to answer your second question, from what I've heard, is there's basically no market for him at this point. You know, there's a lot of questions about how, you know, just how healthy and how explosive he's going to be coming back after all this time off. He was a player that, you know, really made a living off of his athleticism and explosion. And at this point, he's getting older. He has these injuries. You don't know how he's going to look on the floor. So I would be surprised if he's moved before the season. I think the thing that would have to happen is he'd have to come back, you know, play some games for Washington, show the league that he's still, you know, a capable point guard, especially with the price tag that comes with him. And at that point, maybe a team like, you know, we were talking about the Knicks before, they always seem desperate to land a star if he can show that he can still contribute, or, you know, another team like that. But for right now, the market, you know, seems very minimal for John Wall.
Yeah, I think it does, and, you know, I would never wish injuries on anybody, but boy, him being banged up for the rest of his career while making $1 billion for the Knicks a season, certainly just, it feels like something that's just out there in the universe.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
You know, I do want to ask
does,
you about
right?
kind of...
It does.
It really does. I do want to ask you about kind of player perception. And, you know, I think rightfully so. My co-host has been kind of, you know, raking John Wall across the coals. But another guy who I think is kind of, I don't want to say skated, because I think we all understand you want to put yourself in the best financial position possible. But the fact that Gordon Hayward opted out of being in Boston, and it feels like at least partially it's because he's not happy with his role there. And he doesn't like being the third, fourth, fifth banana at certain times. You know, for a guy who, you know, we think back to his days at Butler and all about the team and all about winning, and it feels like that is no longer the case, and nobody seems to care. It's maybe there's just so much noise in the league, it's hard to drill down on having hard feelings about Gordon Hayward, but I gotta be honest, it feels like he's kind of skating a little bit.
It's a good point, Gunner.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with you on that. It's, you know, for Gordon, it was just an unfortunate circumstance in Boston all along. He signed there for, you know, to be kind of a big three on a team that had Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas. Things changed really quickly. Obviously, he got injured in his first game in a Celtics uniform in a gruesome fashion. And he was just never, you know, it took him a long time to even get back to the point where he could contribute. And in the meantime, you know, the Celtics had a couple of guys blossom at, you know, the same position that he played in, obviously, in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And he kind of just lost the spot. It's one of those situations where it's not really anyone's fault. It's an unfortunate injury issue. And, you know, at the end of the day, you can't fully blame Gordon. I think if, you know, things didn't work out the way he wanted and he feels like moving forward, this isn't necessarily, you know, the role that he had signed up for in Boston when he first signed there in 2017, and looking for, you know, a fresh change of scenery. I think that, you know, I do understand where you're coming from, but at the same time, I think given the circumstances, it's somewhat understandable that he would be looking for a fresh home. And for Boston, that would be beneficial too. And, you know, depending on if they're able to, you know, execute a sign and trade and maybe get something in return that would fit their team better. Because as it stands now, he's their third best wing, and to pay, you know, to pay him that money and for him to have a diminished role like that, I think it's a situation where potentially both sides could benefit from parting ways.
So, Michael, you're based in Philly, and I wanted to ask you about the Sixers here because, you know, there was a ton of changeover in the offseason here, bringing in Doc Rivers, obviously, and Daryl Morey coming in as, like, the team president. But I have to say, I really like the start of this offseason for the Sixers here, you know, getting a couple guys that can really sort of complement. I'm not going to say I love getting Dwight Howard. I'm not sure that's I'm a huge fan of that move. But other than that, I kind of like the direction that they're going in here, and they're kind of bringing in some shooters around, you know, that core that could really sort of help. What have you made of the Sixers so far?
Absolutely. I was really impressed with the Sixers on draft night. I think they, you know, Daryl Morey was able to do a couple things all in one night. He was able to, you know, really increase their financial flexibility, which so much of that was tied up in that Horford contract moving forward. you know, you get off the final 2 years of that. Danny Green, who they got back in that trade, will be a free agent after this season. So, you know, those next 2 years on that Horford deal are off the books. It gives them a little bit more flexibility to work with this offseason in terms of, you know, filling in some more pieces around the roster. And it's just balanced the roster out, you know, much better between that and the trade for Seth Curry. You know, you bring in Danny and Seth, two guys that are career 40% three-point shooters and floor spacers. And that's, you know, what a lot of people have wanted to see in Philly. The Sixers have had their best success recently when you put shooters around Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And I think last offseason they kind of went in a different direction with a couple of signings that, you know, didn't fit the roster construction at all. And I think Daryl's, you know, he was tasked with kind of, you know, fixing that mess that was made last offseason. And so far, I think he's done a really good job. I think they're positioned better to, you know, contend for free agents and build a roster good moving forward financially. And I think their roster now is, you know, built better around their two best players than it was last season.
You are honestly the perfect guy for us to have on, because half the time you would think me and my co-host are doing a show in Philly. We basically talk Raptors for a block and then got to talk Sixers, because they are, to me, the most interesting team in the league. We talked about them so much. There's been some noise. You know, obviously, we know where Harden wants to go, but a lot of people have been kind of throwing out the idea of maybe a Ben Simmons trade to get Harden there, pair him up with Embiid. Where are you at on the idea? You know, I've asked you before, but when the idea of trading Ben Simmons for picks, or Embiid for picks and maybe some nice young players, trading one of those guys for James Harden is a completely different animal. Where are you at on the idea of possibly doing that?
Well, you know, first of all, from anything I've heard from, you know, people within the organization or around the league, is that, you know, the Sixers' stance since before Morey was even brought on board, you know, Elton Brand said this right after the season, is that, you know, the team is not looking to move on from either one of those guys at this point, and they're really looking forward to, you know, given now Doc Rivers, but a new head coach, an opportunity to see what he could get out of that duo. Brett Brown was the only coach that either Joel or Ben had ever had in the league, you know, up to this point. So I think the Sixers are really dedicated to, you know, giving Doc at least a single season with both, with that duo, to see, you know, what he could get out of them and if he can kind of take them to the next level. Obviously, things could always change, and there's certain players, and James Harden's one of them, that, you know, don't come available very often. And I think that if, you know, if that opportunity presented itself, that's one of the few trades that I think it would be acceptable, I guess, to say, to trade a guy like Ben Simmons. Like you alluded to before, I'm pretty anti-trading Ben. But in that situation, you know, that's one of the few guys that, you know, if you bring Harden back, you obviously are still right in the thick of the playoff conversation. You may be a contender immediately. So I think it's something that you got to consider. But at the end of the day, I personally don't expect it to be done. And if it was me, you know, I'd think long and hard about getting rid of a guy in Ben Simmons who's 24, career averages 8 points or 8 rebounds, 8 assists a game, and is basically, you know, a nightly triple-double threat. I know people like to focus on the shot, but he does, you know, so many things on the floor. He was first team all defense this year. He just, you know, he's a guy that I think is only going to get better, where Harden, obviously, as great as he is, I think he's, you know, we've seen what he's going to be, and we know what he's going to be, where I think Ben still has another level. So if it's me, I'd be, you know, very careful about potentially moving on from a player like that.
I mean, you can teach guys to shoot. Like we saw with Jason Kidd late in his career, he developed it. And if Ben Simmons is like, I want to be clear, I've been critical of him because of the lack of a shot, and it's affected the way teams have to play him. But I completely agree with you when you put it that way of, let's see how this looks with somebody different kind of calling the shots there. And then, yeah, there's always the hope that that shot will come one day. And then, boy, he's maybe the most dangerous player in the league if that ends up happening. Michael, thoroughly enjoyed the chat. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael.
There he goes. Michael Caskey-Blomain, CBS Sports. CBS bringing the heat today. We talked to him. We talked to Jordan DeJaney a little early on. Great job, producer Dan Marino.
CBS Sports Radio here, where, you know, it's what we play on the overnights, and it's like we continued it into the morning here, just getting all the CBS guys on. But no, that guy's got to love talking with him. But yeah, you're right about the Sixers. They're just such a sexy, fun team to talk about. It's just, I love talking about them. They're like, you know, it's just one of those franchises that it's a signature franchise in the NBA, and the NBA is so fun to talk about, and it just helps. You know, those years where they were that doormat, where it was the process, and they just were winning 10 games a year, I love it. I love talking Sixers.
When it's just, wouldn't you, like, what would you give to do a, like, through the looking glass, you get to see both scenarios play out? Because I agree, like, the idea that, you know, I guess we all knew Brett Brown's the only voice those guys have ever heard. But when you put it that way, it's like, yeah, you probably should try changing the coach before you completely blow up a dynamic young duo like that. But boy, I'd love to see a world, and maybe not because this is in the Raptors division, but boy, I'd love to see a world where it's Harden and Embiid, because that's as terrifying a duo as I could possibly think of.
Yeah, I would be good with that not happening because of them being a rival of the Toronto Raptors, who I love so much. But yeah, that would be really devastating. And I really could picture those two guys working really well together, you know, like two guys as the focal point of the offense. And then you sort of, if you live in the world where you kind of mix in the shooters around them, like Seth Curry, and you live in the world where those guys are still in the team with like Danny Green in it, I honestly feel like that team's an amazing, amazing threat to win the championship. But our boy James Harden only wants to go to Brooklyn. I'm going to Brooklyn to play with my friends. So, boo, boo, boo.
Boo, boo, yeah, boo. I mean, well, look, here's the thing. Here's the thing about that. It's like, have we not already done this? And I guess it's, the thing is, I kind of want to see it.
Old KD again. Old KD again. Oh, God, I can't be LeBron. I got to get all the good players together. Come here, guys. God,
shaking
KD
in my boots,
is
thinking of Kyle Lowry and the Raptors.
KD is the all-time worst. I just cannot stand KD. Oh, come play with me. I got Kyrie Irving, but that's not enough. Come play with me, James Harden. Oh. Oh, anyways, that's my KD impression. What do you think?
I think you nailed it. There is anyone who's heard me opine on this station. No love lost for me and the Slim Reaper, mostly because he won't take that as his nickname. It's an incredible
Durantula.
One. Yeah, Durantula, also good. It does, as much as I don't want to see that happen because I hated what the Warriors were. Oh boy, the infighting, the combustibility of that trio right there. Kyrie and James Harden waving one another off. Like, oh, that'd be like you need, and it's like, I know they got Nash there. I know he's their handpicked
guy. That's what I was going to say.
I know D'Antoni is there to kind of be like, hey, Nash, this is how you talk to superstars. But it feels like that is poor Steve Nash, quite frankly. If the three of them end up there together, I knew he knew what he was walking into with Kyrie and Durant. And then I can only imagine it's like his first reaction, oh man, adding James Harden would be great. And then he thinks of the interpersonal dynamics, and I'm like, oh boy, the head starts pounding, I'm sure.
Well, I love when it was like, I saw a couple reports, it's like, James Harden has been talking about how he would be willing to play off the ball. Okay, man. Yeah, okay. How long does that last? 6 minutes of the first quarter that they play in, he's like, yeah, actually, I like being on the ball better. I like having the ball the entire time. But Kyrie's like, me too. And then KD's like, I guess I'll just stand in the corner. Like, it's just such a weird dynamic. And like, of all the ones, you know, like, I even felt like this was a conversation when the Heat got together. It's like, how... But you kind of, in retrospect, it's like, yeah, of course LeBron was just going to have the ball, and like that's kind of how that works. But those three guys, I really don't know how that works. And like, I would be fascinated to see it because I think it would be pretty neat to see having that much talent. But I really – there would have to be some big-time sacrifices made, right? Like big time. Like you look at, you know, for example, I don't know, like when Ray Allen went to Boston, I feel like he had to take a huge sort of for sure. A stat cut. Like, there's guys, like, that's the kind of stuff we'd be talking about here. So, I'm not sure, man. I don't know if it would work. I'd be, like you said, I would be in for the beautiful disaster and our poor, poor boy, Steve Nash, having to be at the head of it. But, I mean, we're also saying, oh, this poor guy, and he's got, like, what, three of the top, you know, 20 players in the NBA in his team. I'm sure that wouldn't hurt. But, anyways.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'd love to see it. I kind of hope it doesn't happen because I think the league is better off when these guys have their own teams, and it just kind of makes things sexier. But yeah, it's exactly like the Sixers scenario. I'd like to see it in a movie. I don't want to live in that world, but I'd love to watch that for a month or so. I feel like is the best way to put it. What else we got to do? We've got to get back to the NFL. Lots going on. Going to talk with Frank Schwab when we continue. He's got an interesting theory about Tom Brady. I love it. And he'll give it to you when we continue on Sportsnet today.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like a hootenanny right now on Sportsnet today. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee. I'm gonna start playing the washboard with like a stick I found outside. bang a bucket or something. Having a great time. Great job, as always, by a producer or technical producer extraordinaire, Andrew Dutch Holland. And quite frankly, great job by our producer, Dan Marino, cooking us up some great guests today, including Frank Schwab, who we will talk to in just a moment's time. Obviously, plenty to get to in the NFL. I know we've talked about the Bills a little early on. They're on the bye this week. So, quite frankly, McKee, it'll be nice to, you know, I always try to keep a close eye on the Bills, of course, the quasi-local team. But I have to be honest, not that I don't enjoy watching Josh Allen fling that thing around, but it's going to be nice to kind of divert my attention as many different ways as possible this weekend.
I agree, and I'm really looking forward to talking to Frank about the Saints, but I can't wait to watch Taysom Hill at quarterback. I just have no idea what to expect. Is he going to be throwing, running? It's gonna be wild, I feel like, so I'm excited for that.
Well, you know what? I'm happy you brought that up, because I wasn't sure how intrigued you would be. I actually had that as a question cooked up for the game sweeping the nation, big deal or no deal.
Oh, you should have got me.
Okay, well, I'll just do it right now. Big deal or no deal, the Saints starting Taysom Hill instead of Jameis Winston. Big deal no deal.
Big deal. Absolute big deal. I just think, you know, you sign Jameis Winston and you would figure that, you know, you would keep Taysom Hill as that sort of gadget guy in the similar sort of way you use him with Drew Brees, you know, when you have Drew Brees in the fold. But they just, you know, the joke I love to say is, Gunning, find someone who loves you like Sean Payton loves Taysom Hill, because you will be happy for the rest of your life. He loves him some Taysom Hill. So it doesn't surprise me that the first time he gets the opportunity to start him, he does. But yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just, excuse me, I got a speck of dust here. I guess I'm just, you know, interested in what Jameis Winston would look like away from the Buccaneers. I'm interested to see what he would be like in that offense. And I just think he's a classic comedy guy that is just super exciting to watch. And like 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions, like he's just a complete wild card. So I always love more Jameis, but Taysom's going to be interesting.
So I'm going big deal, because I don't know that they're doing it because they want to, is why I think it's a big deal. I saw something. Jameis has all these playing time incentives. Saints are up against the cap. We know the NFL, the cap isn't real, but it hurts you years down the line for things you do this year. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm definitely not a capologist. Brandon Pridham, I am not. But my understanding of that is I do think it's just they're tight up against it. So I think it's a big deal. If you have a starting quarterback you'd like to use and you're not using them for salary cap reasons, I don't know that that's the case, but if it is, I think that's a little bit damning. In terms of Taysom Hill, I think you're right. I think Sean Payton is just seeing all the other fun quarterbacks in the NFL. He's like, man, Kyler's so fun, and like Josh Allen runs around, and of course there's Tua time, and you got Lamar Jackson and Russell. I'd like a guy that I could do some fun stuff with instead of just calling perfectly choreographed 7-yard outs. I'd like to see that, and I honestly think that's why he's leaning so hard to Hill.
So we were talking about fantasy earlier, and I saw a lot of tweets about this. Did you see this? That in ESPN leagues, I don't know who has their fantasy on ESPN these days, but I saw on ESPN that he is still eligible as a tight end. So
wow,
he's eligible as a QB and a tight end. So you are going to be able to put him in at tight end. So you're going to have basically get to play two quarterbacks and having them in that Saints offense. And you're getting to this point of the fantasy season. Like, we're deep here. That could swing a league or two if you have him in at tight end this week. So a little, man, we're coming for Andy and show. Like, we're just talking fantasy football, you know, we're injustices in the fan league. Talking about Taysom Hill, tight end eligibility. We're just going to do a fantasy show from now on.
I would never cut Andy McNamara's grass, and the only reason because of that is because last time I did a show with him, I bullied him into sending me free Domino's pizza coupons, so he's in my good books
actually,
forever. He is in my good
books
forever.
He owes me pizza. He owes me pizza because we played Win Andy's Pizza with me and George Russick and him, and I did they had some callers, which was very fun. They had a couple callers, and they had to pick who they wanted to go with for trivia, and I did 10 questions, and I got 6 of them. So he owes me pizza.
Well, hold on a second. I was singing his praises, but now I just bullied him into getting my pizza because I was his co-host. I also dusted J.R. Manitad, who produces shows on this station, in Win Andy's Pizza. I went 10-0. I won't say what he did.
What?
It was not good. Now, I have to be honest, looking at the questions, it was like a J.R.'s was like a university-level like exam, and mine was like, what is a primary color, where the different levels are questions. So I don't know that it was fair, but if I'm supposed to win pizza for that, I'm coming to get you, Andy, and I got to be honest. Now, we're still trying to track down Frank Schwab. I'm going to give you one little quick tidbit that he had on this. Crazy theory. Tom Brady struggling at night games because he's old and it's past his bedtime. I just saw that. I love it. Anybody who's just going to lean all in on a theory that they don't really totally sort of believe, okay. I saw that and I love it.
Buddy, I got to be honest. I think this theory actually has some legs. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I'm, what am I, 32, 31? And
I don't know.
Like,
you tell us.
I gun to my head. I don't know how old I am. Probably 32. I was born in 88. So, yeah, 32. Honestly, like, I have a tough time staying up through the whole Sunday nighter these days. I'm like, oh my God, Mike, it's only the second, like, the second quarter. It's like, it's 9:30. Like, I'm sorry. I'll have to PVR the rest of this. Like, I get it. And I'm only 32, and he's 10, 11 years older than me. So I actually think there's legs to that theory. It is late. It starts too late, like 8 o'clock. Crazy. Like, I remember our beer league hockey games. We had a hockey game once that started at 11:45 once, Gunner. 11:45 p.m. That was legitimately, the boys showed up. It's like, this is terrible. I should be getting into bed right now. I'm starting a hockey game. So I can only imagine what playing an NFL-level game starting at 8:20. It's too late. I think that's a great point. I think it's actually a decent take.
That gives me flashbacks to my my own intramural hockey back in my Humber College days, our terrible team that got trounced pretty much every single week. But yeah, you know how unfun it is to go to the rink at 11 o'clock to get shellacked for 45 minutes? No fun at all. No, thank you. You know what else is no fun at all? Long par threes. Par threes that are too long.
Good transition. This is a great tweet by Dillette that we got to get into.
Well, I saw you tweeting at him, and I've never agreed with anything more. Now, so the tweet, do you have it up, or do you have the gist of it here? Basically, par threes
are
too long.
Let me just quickly pull it up. No, I got it right here. So Hamilton, it was an original tweet from Andrew Harvey on Twitter, who I'm not exactly sure. He's a golfer.
I've told you about him on Instagram. He's an incredible golfer.
Oh, I have him on Instagram. That's him? That's the same guy?
Yeah.
Okay, because I have his Instagram. It's an incredible Instagram. I don't know how he does it, but he plays all the sickest courses, takes great pictures. But he says the word on the street is the par 3 sixth at Hamilton, which we've played. I don't know if you care about that. Not a big deal, but we've played it.
Not a big deal.
Was that the one we started on, Gunner?
Might have been. That shotgun start at Media Day was a cluster, you know what. And it was we had fun, though. Great time. Golf Canada, RBC, Canadian Open. Lovely.
So he said, the word on the street is a par 3 sixth at Hamilton will play as long as 255 from the new tees after the renovation opens up. And our boy Graham Dillette, good Canadian boy, we're trying to work his way back onto the tour, trying to work his way back into some majors. He says, the best par 3s in the world are played with a short iron where the thought is needed and nerves are high. Long irons in lumber into par 3s is mind-numbing. And I know you agree with this take. Because you don't like the longer par threes, but what do you think the max is for a par three? What do you think the most it should be?
Well, so like, of course, let me start with the caveat. It's all relative, right? Like, depending on what tees you're from, of course, that is. I really think I'm okay with some that are a little longer. Like, if you have a few par, like, of course, you're going to have a few par threes on your 18-hole loop. I'm okay with having one that's kind of creeping towards 200 or something like that. I think it's fine to kind of require different shots of people throughout their round. But the idea that every single par three is kind of creeping up around there, I like something in that kind of 150, 170 range. And you know what, if I gun to my head, I had to pick one, give me the 95 yard par three over the 200 yard par three. I'd much rather that than to have to go in with a wood or a hybrid or some long iron.
Yeah, I think the max I'll go is 200, and that's, you know, I think that is a real sort of test within a golf course. And I know we're getting into the weeds of golf courses on here, but why not? It's our show.
Should have picked up the phone.
So yeah, this is what happens when our guests don't pick up. We get into talking about golf course design. But honestly, like a nice 200-yard par 3 where, you know, you can hit maybe a 5-iron or a 6-iron into it, I think that's good. But, like, you're getting up over 220. Like that's too far. I really do think that kind of doesn't turn it into a par 4 by any stretch of the imagination. But it kind of just turns it into this, like, no man's land where it's like you shouldn't be grinding to make a par on a par 3. Like, if you miss the green with a wedge, that's your fault, and that's when you have to grind. It shouldn't be when you hit a good 4-iron, and it's like, oh, yeah, I didn't make the green, and now I got a chip. And like, you should always have this chance of getting it on the green and one on a par 3. So I think 255 is absurd. Like, I'm pulling driver on a 255. Yep. Like, it's like, you're not a norm. But the thing is, we probably wouldn't be playing from the tees that are 255. But if the one tee is 255, then that means probably all the other ones are. And if you think about it, are longer. And if you think about this is probably just for Canadian Open stuff. They want to be able to keep it so that they're still in the running for Canadian Open, and they want to have it so that they can stretch it out to be that long. But yeah, 255, my ideal length, is this because it's my favorite club in the bag, is 135. 135 is my ideal length. It's the 52-degree wedge, favorite club. So give me 135, but I think the best is probably anywhere from 150 to 160.
It's so funny you say that, because it's like, well, I mean, if you're asking me, I know what my favorite club to hit into a par 3 is, so I would just like it to be exactly that number.
Number, 135. Yeah, perfect.
Honestly, you know what? Hot take. You know what I think happened at Hamilton there? They were watching too much wing foot this year. They heard all the Billy Casper talk laying up on par 3s, and they're like, oh, let's do it. But yeah, nothing more frustrating than when you just have a par 3 that's way too long. There's a course we like to play out here in Burlington, and first time you guys brought me out here, I nearly walked off when we got to the par 3.
Indian Wells. I forgot about that.
It is 220 screaming into the wind a lot of times. And
But at least it's way down the hill.
It is way down the hill, but I want no parts of it. You know me. I just, like, get me through this. I can't stand it. Love the course, but cannot stand that hole. Lovely. Little golf course.
Glad we got that in, Connor.
So I'm thrilled we got that in. Look, have a brand and stick to it. If Sho and Andy were here, they'd be talking fantasy football. We already cut their grass on that. We've been bouncing all over the place. We got in some hot F1 talk earlier today. Obviously, we've cared so much about NBA free agency. And please keep it tuned here today. If Fred VanVleet, Serge Ibaka get deals done, you will hear about it. You will not miss it. We know Joey Vendetta coming up after this. So you know you're going to be informed if you keep it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Of course, you can follow along with all the day's free agent action as well on the Sportsnet app. You know what else you can do? You can stick around, because we got one segment left. Dan Marino is going to clean up anything. Maybe we'll shame him for Frank Schwab not picking up the phone. Probably not. He's done a great job. Let's see what Marino's got for us. One segment left on Sportsnet today.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Dan Marino's music. Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee. You hear those dulcet tones, you know what time it is. It's time for Dan Marino to come in. He's probably going to brag about the Dolphins. I guess we'll let him have it this time. And he's definitely going to ask us some questions. Dan Marino, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic. Love that little intro you did for me there, with saying that's Dan Marino's music.
I know you love wrestling, but... You're into that.
Yeah, of course. I grew up watching wrestling. That was like that's the first thing I ever got into, I think, as a kid. That and the Leafs and the Leafs. Yeah,
I too loved wrestling when I was a kid,
and that's where it stayed.
And now I'm a man, a kid of my own,
with a child.
Hey, man, with a child. Guarantee I'll get back into it. He is just a week old now, so a little young for it. But hey, when he's like, hey, Dad, Roman Reigns is doing the thing. Come here. Be like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, let's do it. Sure, Roman Reigns, if he's still a thing. I feel like John Cena is going to be like the Hulk Hogan. He's going to be 90, still trying to get it done out there. I don't know. We'll see. Dan Marino's probably rolling his eyes at us. What have you got for us today, Dan?
Well, first of all, I just want to say congratulations again. Thank you. How perfect is it? You're obviously a huge golf fan. I mean, you're one half of the golf guys. And your firstborn child is born on Masters weekend. But going forward, you don't have to worry about, like, celebrating your child's birthday on Masters weekend.
I will not I will not divulge the name of the coworker of ours who emailed me that exact sentiment. But yeah, it does work out perfectly because you better believe I will refer to him as a Masters baby. We're going to have to get some type of green jacket or green jumper for him to be rolling around in April. But yeah, it's the best of both worlds. He's going to forever have to hear about Dustin Johnson winning the Masters as he was being born. And the best part, as you said, is that I get to watch the Masters with no guilt because, hey, it's just a day in April. So please, as far as I'm concerned, the November Masters, it was a wonderful, lovely thing. Let's never do it again. Never, ever do it again.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's perfect. Okay. All right. Let's go with the first one here. So, obviously, we're heading back into lockdown on Monday. Not great news. But with that, we're going to be indulging in a lot more media once again. What are your best movie or show recommendations for people who are going to have a lot more time on their hands, sitting at home?
I mean,
you got anything,
Mickey? My one recommendation that everybody recommended to me and I was not impressed with was with the old Queen's Gambit there. I don't know if you watched that or not, but I don't know. Like, everyone's like, this is the best show. And I was like, yeah, a lot of chess. Kind of corny. That's my review. A lot of chess, kind of corny.
Let me jump in on that. I forget who the tweeter is, but I saw it, and I cannot sum it up any better than this. Look, we're all bored in pandemic, but are we really watch a show about chess bored? My wife tried to get me on it. I think I'm going to pass. But, man, it's funny because this isn't so much a recommendation, but it's something I'm missing. We should have had season 3 of Succession by now, and it's borderline criminal that we haven't got it. So it's funny. I've been spinning back a lot of my old favorites. I'm just running through The Wire right now, which I know Sam doesn't like. Probably going to get to The Sopranos next if this thing goes on too much longer. I've been spinning back a lot of stuff, so I don't have any hot breaking TV picks for you, but that's what I'm doing. I'm living back my past.
I too am rewatching a show, but it's a show I haven't seen in forever. And I actually had a conversation with somebody the other night about it, not on the air, but it was Workaholics. And I was like, you know what? I loved Workaholics when it first came out. I thought it was the funniest show ever. I'm going to go back and rewatch this and see if it holds up. Boy, howdy, does it hold up. It is an incredibly funny show. I have been watching that a lot and really having some laughs. So I would highly recommend that to anyone to go back and rewatch that. And, I mean, we're going into kind of a dark time here. We're all sitting in our houses. Maybe don't watch any dark content. You know, maybe try to keep it light. Workaholics is light as it gets. It's an incredibly funny show. So there you go.
Good job. Quickly, you just talk about spinning back stuff and whether it holds up or not. I know a favorite athlete of both of ours, or I actually feel like we're both kind of conflicted of how we feel about him. Justin Thomas, I saw on his Instagram story the other day. He's like, cannot watch Entourage enough times through. And I'm like, oh boy, the once was enough for me. Thank you very much. So just be careful. If you go back and relive an old favorite, it might jade you on what exactly was wrong with you while you were watching that. So just be careful out there. Kids, that's all I'll say.
That's great. I agree with you guys. Going back and watching shows that you haven't watched in a long time is a great way to do it. Gunning, you know, you said you're gonna watch The Sopranos back. I watched that at the beginning of the pandemic, and you want to talk about a show that holds up? My God, is that ever an amazing show?
Okay, I got a hot take.
Okay,
I absolutely love that show. I think it's the best show ever. I really do. It's probably my favorite, but Too much therapy. They go to the therapy well way too many times in that show. Like, I love his therapist. I think she's excellent. But by the end of it, I'm like, okay, like, enough. Like, I feel like that's there's a little too much of it in there. That's my only thing I don't like about that show.
I can't say I like disagree with the premise, but Goodfellas is my favorite movie of all time. So every time I see the therapist, who of course was a big, big part in that movie, I'm just like, yeah, man, just taking me back.
She's so good.
My favorite.
But, like,
she's incredible.
It's just a little too much. That's my only complaint.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, Dan, what else you got?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that's fair. I think that the reason they had to keep forcing it in is because, like, that's the reason the show started, was, like, with a mob boss going to therapy.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
It did drag on a bit at the end. Yeah. Okay, so on the flip side, obviously, super negative. We're going back into lockdown. But I want to flip the script a little here. Brent, this is going to be really easy for you, so maybe, I don't know, think of something different. But what are some things that happened to you in that have happened to you in 2020 or that have happened in general that have been like super positive?
Okay, I had a kid, like it's been incredible. Tiring but incredible. So we'll dip a little past that. And I think I don't know if I'm speaking for my co-host here. You want to talk about self-indulgent content that we just did? I've never had as much fun playing golf in my entire life as I had this summer. The amount of places I've got to play, in part because of my shameless co-host here, it's been incredible getting to get out with him as often as I had. You know, early on in lockdown, even before we were able to play, we were out walking around on courses, keeping our distance. So it's the game of golf has definitely got me through 2020. I'm sure it has for a lot of other people as well. And sorry if I just stole your answer, McKee, but I don't know what else to say.
No, I think the weather has been unbelievable in 2020.
Yeah.
And I truly think that, you know, I felt like it was an insanely long summer. I felt like it got started really early and it went until November. Like it was warm all the way through. It was warm yesterday. If I wasn't producing Smith and Jones, I would have been on the golf course yesterday. Like it was a beautiful, beautiful day. So I think the weather has been great to sort of keep people, you know, keep their mental. We needed a good year of weather because of obvious reasons, and I think, you know, people were able to spend a ton of time outside this summer, and you know, we're heading into the winter now, but guess what, I saw that the Masters are like 130 something days away. Mm-hmm. 130 days, like that's April. That's when we're coming out of this. That's nothing, guys, we got this. So I'll piggyback on Gunning talking about the self-indulgent golf stuff. I love the golf I had this year. I agree with everything that he said, and keep an eye on Twitter, and you know, I might have a little piece coming out that speaking of self-indulgent, I might have wrote a little blog about the golf season. So keep an eye out for that.
Well, and you just talk about the weather, and I'll conjoin the two things. Me and you sat and had an orange crush on a patio after a round of golf while we were wearing T-shirts in November. So, yeah. The weather's incredible. The golf's incredible. And I think this often sometimes gets overlooked, and hey, we're all going to roll our eyes. This is cheesy. The friendships have been incredible. I've been able to, despite how locked down we've all been, I've been able to spend a ton of time with the people that matter to me. So hopefully we're able to still find ways to do that. I think I'm done with the Zoom drinks. We did enough of that early on.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
We're done. We're good. But hey, get outside. Get yourself bundled up and have some fun this winter for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I love what you talked about at the end there, about like making connections over Zoom calls and stuff like that. Because there were times, especially at the worst of it, where I felt like I was talking to like uncles and aunts more often than I would have been without the pandemic, just because I was
for
FaceTiming
sure.
them every day.
Yeah,
which totally. Is great.
No, I agree. Like I really did talk to my friends that like I would never really talk to. Well, I mean, like I talk to them when I go to On Sound or talk to them when I see them, but I wouldn't like get on a Zoom chat with them. That's for sure.
Yeah. Dan, you got a quick one for us before we scoot?
Yeah, okay. So at the beginning of every NFL season, we all have our Super Bowl predictions. Now that we're past the halfway point, what was your Super Bowl prediction before the season, and has it changed now that we're halfway through the season?
I didn't, but I will give you mine.
All right, let's hear it.
It's really, really spicy. The Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. Yeah, so Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs beat, they're going to beat Jared Goff and the Rams in the Super Bowl. How's that sound?
Ooh. I like the Chiefs and I like the Seahawks. Obviously, I haven't changed my mind on KC. Seattle is incomplete, but I still kind of trust their bones more than just about anybody else. I don't know that it's changed, but I could definitely, you know, the AFC I'm crystal clear on. And the NFC, I could talk myself into two or three teams. But most importantly, Dan, the Dolphins are not included in that conversation. Just thought
no,
you should know.
They'll be close.
No,
they're getting
not.
Close.
Not yet.
Next couple
not
years,
yet.
They're going to be in the conversation.
For sure. I can't wait for Dolphins versus Cardinals 2 years from now.
Okay.
Yeah, well said. Dan, thank you so much. Great job by you today cooking up some wonderful guests for us. Derek Brandejo was dropping nuggets of Deal or No Deal on us, which was incredible. Howie Mandel, so dramatic. Love that. You know, Joey Vendetta is coming up next, so obviously keep it tuned here. And again, Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet, looking for homes. If they have one, you'll find out here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.